Hello and welcome to WGTC Radio, the official podcast of entertainment website We Got This Covered. I'm Jonathan Lack.
And I am Sean Chapman.
And Sean, it's been too long since we've done that introduction.
Yeah, I mean, it's been like that 2 weeks. Long.
I know.
Yeah.
But it felt, I don't know, I feel bad when we miss a week. I always feel like, you know, we've got a duty to someone's got a podcast, we're the guys to do it.
Yeah, because there's no other podcasts, you know, no. Right? Like, nobody else. It's just us and, like, the one half person that listens to our podcast.
Right.
It's just, that's the whole podcast community on the planet.
I mean, I think it
catches on. I think it's a good format, you know?
Yeah, I think, but here's the thing. Who else fills the niche of people who talk obsessively about both Doctor Who and Persona 3?
Yeah, that is, there's probably a podcast out there somewhere for that that's not us.
It's not as good.
The Dr. Persona 3 Who podcast, I imagine that probably exists.
Yeah.
There are multiple dedicated Persona podcasts.
So what we're saying is we need to go even deeper into the obscurest shit we've
Okay. No, that's not an answer. That's not a solution to anything. Like, if you do that, you do get, like, some more listeners, but then, like, you cap off there, and all the listeners you do get are fucking crazy. So it's like, you don't want to get too specific.
It's the Fox News effect.
Yeah, exactly. You'll just get killed that way.
Yes.
So, yeah, it's a dangerous road to go down.
But, you know, it was my birthday 2 days ago, and you did agree that this podcast would be devoted to entirely talking about Harry Potter and all, and you would pretend to like it.
Yeah, it's my birthday. Exactly. Yeah, I mean, no, because it was your birthday 2 days ago. So, okay. I don't give a... even if it was your birthday today, I wouldn't give a flying fuck. Who cares? Oh, great. It's the same arbitrary calendar date as it was when the day you were born. Fucking congratulations, Jonathan.
All right.
I'm so happy. The Earth is in the same relative position compared to the Sun as it was when you were born. How great it was.
See, I think this is good for the listeners because they know we haven't changed since last time.
Yeah, exactly.
This is comforting for them. Mm-hmm. All right. Sorry we missed last week. I was really busy. Sean was really busy.
Yeah.
Podcasting, you know, this may not be the most professionally recorded podcast, but it does take time and effort. So,
and we have a microphone, so
yes.
It's not the least professionally recorded podcast. That's our old one.
Yes.
We, you know, there's no one else that, like, below us other than our old podcast.
In fact, I have a story about this.
Sure.
So, last week I was thinking, God, I really don't want to miss this week. I felt like we were on a roll. We had done a string of, I think, really good podcasts.
Yeah.
And so I don't want to miss. So I thought, I'll go into the archives. Maybe there's an old episode I should rerun from one of our old podcasts before we were WGTC Radio. And I listened for a second, heard the audio quality, and I was like, fuck, I'm deleting these. I never want to hear them again.
Yeah.
I mean, if you don't know how we originally recorded, like back when we first podcasted the first time ever, I'm pretty sure it was like anti-professional.
Yeah.
What I did was I hooked up like a guitar recording microphone, like just something a musician would use.
Yeah.
USB, MIDI in, and put it in the center of the room, and Sean and I talked into it, and it was so... And there was so much exterior noise that what I did was I did a noise-removing program on it, and it made us sound like we were all talking into tin cans.
Yeah.
And it, like, you couldn't even tell Sean and mine's voices apart.
Yeah, I kind of, honestly, I miss those days. We were so punk back then. Like, we've sold out now, you know? It's like, we used to be the Who, like, when the Who started with my generation, and it's like, they were playing soul music, and that was fucking weird. And now we're, like, basically modern Who that doesn't really do anything.
Yeah.
It's like they've lost, you know, like Roger Daltrey can't sing anymore because his vocal cords are basically destroyed. It's just, it's not good.
All right. So, yeah, this is coming out on a Friday morning. That might be the new standard time for podcasts. I'm not sure.
Yeah, who fucking knows?
We'll figure it out. Well, you know, follow me on Twitter, at Jonathan Lack. That's where all podcast updates are if we're taking a week off or something. But that means we've got shit to catch up on.
Yeah.
We're going to talk GTA 5, do our final, you know, review, close the book on this game.
Exactly, our, trilogy now of GTA 5 podcasts?
Yeah. We did one where we kind of did an in-depth mechanics discussion, one where we did a shorter, just sort of discussion on our feelings.
Progress update. And now we've both finished the game, so.
And
GTA Online has come out, so we can talk about that.
Dabbled in the disastrous monstrosity that is GTA Online.
Eh, I don't think it's that bad. I mean, the launch was a launch of a giant multiplayer thing, yes. That happened, but...
Yes, but... No, I'm referring more to just the content. I didn't even go into it until, like, a week after it came
out. I mean, come on, you played an hour of it, like...
It was a bad hour of gameplay.
Yeah, my first hour was pretty bad with it, too, but...
When you can't literally... When you literally cannot do anything because you get shot every 5 steps and die, and then you have to watch, a 30-minute cutscene of some dude talking to you from the heavens...
That only happens
that wouldn't end...
But
yeah, yeah.
Oh, well, we'll get into GTA.
We're also going to talk a little bit about Beyond Two Souls, other new video game release. Sean has not played it. I have. I'm not finished yet, but I got it right here. Good game. I like it. Been interesting to see the different reactions to it. I think it's a fascinating game. We're going to talk some awesome Doctor Who news.
Yes.
Really happy. That's why we played a happy song at the beginning, because anytime we reclaim more Doctor Who from the depths of nothingness,
it's a happy day. From the void. Hole from which BBC threw all Doctor Who episodes into, all of them that I care about, basically.
Right.
Except for like a small handful that they kept.
So, but before we get into any of that, Sean, I haven't seen you in like 2 weeks. What you been up to?
Fucking shit, dude. I don't know. I wrote that. I mean, God, the last podcast I ended with my thesis on that one essay I wrote.
Yeah.
So I've written like two other essays since that one. They all suck. They're all bad essays. But
okay.
I did that. And that's taken up most of my time. But then I also got the other day, I played a whole other game since the last time I did this podcast, too. So, like, probably a week ago now, I got... Actually, I know on October 5th, I got Brothers, A Tale of Two Sons, which is a terrible fucking title. But it's an Xbox Live Arcade game. I think it's also now available... I'm pretty sure it's available on the PlayStation Network. It might also be available on Steam. But it's a small game. It's not an indie title, but it's basically an indie game. Fuck it, who cares? And it's kind of like Journey or Gone Home in the sense that it's a small game that you can play in the scope of like a single sitting easily. It's like 2 to 3 hours long. And so on October 5th, like I'd heard a lot of good buzz around this game. It's a kind of like game that I like to get into, you know, and just see, hey, what the fuck, like weird little awesome emotional like story driven games that are being made today. Like I want to engage with those. So I bought that. It's only like $10, and I highly, highly recommend it. And it's a really, really great, really emotional sort of. It's very sort of like Celtic mythological in a way of you play as these two brothers, and the whole game is sort of just really constructed around the really unique control method you use, that you play both brothers simultaneously. So you have the older brother and the younger brother, and you control the older brother with the left thumbstick and the younger brother with the right thumbstick, and then they both can do contextual actions like based on where they are in the world. And so the left trigger does the older brother's contextual action, and the right trigger does the younger brother's. So it's like if you had to, one of the very early puzzles is you have to like move this pipe to some gears to jam a gear, and to do that you have to maneuver both brothers over to either side of the pipe, and it basically becomes like a furniture moving simulator where you hold down both of the triggers on either end, pick up the pipe, and then you have to sort of figure out how you would maneuver the analog sticks to get them to turn it. So you have to like kind of like, you know, push up on the right thumbstick and down on the left thumbstick to get them to sort of like spin it towards the camera. And it's a really unique controller interface that really fucks with your head, because it associates those two characters with like the left and right on the controller. But if like the older brother is on the right side of the screen and the younger brother is on the left side of the screen, your head gets completely fucked, because you're thinking like you're trying to control them with the wrong sticks, and so everything goes wrong. But it's really, really inventive. There's no, like, they all speak in, like, this, like, really vague, like, fakey human language that, you know, there's no, like, subtitles or anything.
So it's like Animal Crossing.
Except for it's not terrible. It's a video game that I would actually play and spend time with that's not like, oh, I'm gonna, like, get some fruit, and now I'm going to just, like, put this game down, and then tomorrow, I'm gonna get some more fucking fruit, because I need to get bells, or whatever the fuck you do in Animal Crossing. No, like, brothers, so it's the story is really emotional, this journey of these two brothers who have to go get to like this like ancient like Yggdrasil type fucking world tree thing to get some like magical salve to save their father's life. And the mother died, like you see like the first thing that like the first cutscene of the game is you see like this flashback to the mother drowning, and the younger brother was like saw it happen, so like that's sort of like the emotional crux of the game. And the two relationships, then the relationship between the two brothers as they go on this like really crazily crazy inventive journey where you go through like all these awesome places, like these like haunted woods and this like giant battlefield, or this battlefield of giants, where it's like this massive battle occurred between these two giants.
Nice.
And so you sort of like move through that wreckage, and yeah, the game is really, really fucking good, especially the ending. So I highly recommend it. And one of the weird things about the game was I hadn't even realized it at first until I was almost at the end of the game, that I had just completely randomly started playing that game on my brother's birthday, which is October 5th.
That's
it was
cool.
Like I was halfway through it, and then I was like, wait, it's my brother's fucking birthday. Like, this is because, you know, like, obviously, if you're playing a game called Brothers and the two main characters are brothers and you spend the whole game defining the relationship between those two brothers and you are a person who has a brother, that, like, inevitably gets you thinking about it. It's like, oh, fuck, I have my brother's birthday.
Should probably give him a call.
Yeah, fuck that.
Oh, okay.
Who gives a shit? But thanks.
Did you have any communication with him on October
5th? No, why okay. would I? It's my older brother. Like, who gives a fuck? But yeah, no.
One day we can do a whole therapy session where you talk about how your brother stole all your food once.
Yeah.
Or many, many times.
Throughout my whole childhood, yes.
Yes.
But yeah, no. Brother is a Tale of Two Sons. Still, that's such a... It's such a terrible... Because, like... That's such a terrible title, right?
Yes.
Like,
if it was Tale of Brothers, that'd be fine.
Yeah, Brothers is fine, and that's, like, how everyone refers to it. But it's, like, that subtitle, A Tale of Two Sons, it's, like, how fucking redundant is that, right?
Yeah.
Like, oh, I thought it was Brothers, A Tale of One Son. Like, there's... Of course it's A Tale of Two Sons. There's two fucking brothers.
Sisters, A Tale of Two Daughters.
Yeah, exactly.
Siblings, A Tale of Multiple Children from the same parents.
That may or may not be of all the same gender. Who knows?
Yeah.
But yeah, no,
or brothers, adopted through the legal system. You know, they could go on and define it.
Yeah, but Brothers Tale of Two Sons, highly recommend it. Like I said, it's like $10, and you just looked it up. It's everywhere, right?
It's on PSN, yeah. It's on Steam. It's $14.99 on both.
Okay, so it's $15. I think it might actually be a little bit cheaper on Xbox. But,
well, cool.
Or it might have been when I picked it up. But yeah, like it's definitely... And you know, it's a great game if you're just like, wait for a Steam sale. This is a, like, kind of like Gone Home. This is a perfect fucking Steam sale game of just like, pick it up for like $3 when it goes on sale, and then just... That's like $1 an hour, basically, for the experience. And it's, like I said, it's really, really well done.
Nice.
And then there's been one other thing that I've been playing that I'm only a little bit into, so I can't talk a whole lot about it. But I got Splinter Cell Blacklist, which is the newest Splinter Cell game, sequel to Splinter Cell Conviction, which is the not newest Splinter Cell game. But that was... I'm not a huge fan of stealth games, particularly like the old school style stealth. But I like this new... version of sort of like action stealth game, like this very like predatory stealth, like kind of like The Last of Us is very much in that style. That is also very much like Splinter Cell Conviction was very much like that, unlike the older Splinter Cell games that were like, oh, if a guard sees you, in that immediate moment that guard sees you, you've just lost the mission. It's like, well, fuck that. I don't want to spend my time playing a game sitting around watching AI routines and waiting for the like pixel perfect moment to walk in between the AI routines so no one sees me. Like, fuck that shit. So old school stealth I hate, but this, like, it's much more like a very creative version of combat where you have to explore around, create all these opportunities to sort of trick your opponent and make your way through more or less undiscovered, because your opponents, if they do find you, can kill you almost immediately, but if they can't find you, you can just, like, kill everybody. And it's really, Splinter Cell Blacklist is really well done. It's got a little more stealthiness to it than Splinter Cell Conviction, and I think that's actually in its favor. And... the one thing that Splinter Cell Blacklist about Splinter Cell Blacklist that I absolutely adore, that is a problem that I have with like almost every single video game, but especially any video game that has a stealth component that is composed of like, if you are detected, you basically fail the mission at any point, is that in Splinter Cell Blacklist, when an enemy sees you and like there's like a little thing on the reticle, like an arrow pops up and the arrow widens like the longer they see you, and if it sort of like widens halfway around the reticle, then it will start flashing and then it'll go red, and once it's red they've like fully detected you and that's when shit's on. But it's like that moment where it'll flash for like a split second before it goes red, and that moment it's where they've noticed you, and they, if like you do nothing about it, they will detect you. Like even if you go around a corner or something, they will go into like full on detected mode, but in that split second you can kill them. And then nobody will know about it. And that's a problem I have with almost every stealth video game, is there's always that one bullshit thing of, like, the guy detected me literally, like 0.2 seconds before I killed him. And then it's like, you lose the mission, or you lose whatever stealth bonus you have. And it's so dumb, because that's so arbitrary, because who gives a fuck, as long as he's not been able to yell out or anything, or alert anybody, it doesn't matter at all. And this game has a mechanic, like, the best mechanic I've seen that justifies that, where you know, okay, like, they've seen me, but I can fix this if I react, like, immediately and just, like, headshot them in the face with my, like, silenced pistol. So, yeah, like I said, I've only done a couple of the story missions, but it's really, I'm having a really good time with it.
Nice. So, let's see. So, anything else going on?
Not really.
Yeah, I've been super, super busy. Not a whole lot to talk about on that end. I could tell you about the shit I have to do for school this weekend.
don't. But that's, I don't give a shit.
No, so, it's okay.
They definitely don't give a shit.
No, they definitely don't give a shit. But so that's what I've been busy with is some school and work stuff. But let's see. So I had kind of... I haven't seen any new movies. It's just... It's been busy and I feel bad. I have not had time to go to a lot of press screenings. So there's so many movies coming out I'm excited for. Captain Phillips with Tom Hanks comes out this weekend. We've got 12 Years a Slave coming up, which is from Steve McQueen, who directed Shame, which was my favorite film of 2011. So much good stuff. And I want to reiterate, because I talked about this 2 weeks before it came out. If you haven't seen Gravity, go see Gravity. It's so fucking great. Based on the box office totals, you probably saw Gravity.
I haven't yet. Yeah, I haven't had the time to. But
I just, it's, you know, I'm also happy to see that a movie that good has attracted that many people, based kind of solely on quality. It's not you know, it's not a sequel or something.
Yeah.
But in any case, so...
Before we move on from Gravity, just, like, one weird thing that happened on the internet that just, like, really annoyed me was there's a really famous astrophysicist, Neil deGrasse Tyson, that on... I follow him on Twitter, and he, like, very quickly on Gravity, like, after Gravity came out, he... And he does this all the time with basically everything, where he, like, what Neil deGrasse Tyson mostly does is he sort of just promotes science and the philosophy of science to the general public. He's kind of like the modern Carl Sagan, and he's an awesome fucking dude. And he started tweeting out stuff, just like basic minor scientific inaccuracies in Gravity. And then he ended all like this like probably like a dozen tweets with, "Oh, by the way, like don't take these too seriously. I really like the film." And then immediately after that, about everyone a dozen different websites were just like, "Well, fucking like," and most of them didn't like address Neil deGrasse Tyson by name, but they were just like,
"I saw this."
Certain astrophysicists have taken issue, and it's like, and this is art, and why art doesn't need to be real, and why like art doesn't need to portray science in a realistic fashion. It's just like, how did like fucking come on, dude? Like, you don't need to get that defensive about it. Everyone understands it's a fucking movie that nothing is ever going to be 100% accurate. That's not what Neil deGrasse Tyson was asking for. He was just pointing out just like weird little things about like this is how this would actually work if you were actually in space. He's just like telling you actual science. He's not saying every single movie or Gravity needs to be 100% scientifically accurate at every single moment. So internet, calm the fuck down.
Yeah, and honestly, you know, and someone who has seen the movie and loves it, it's, I like hearing the little ways it's inaccurate.
Yeah, exactly.
It's kind of fun because, and you know, I'm sure Alfonso Cuarón is aware of all that too. He did his research, and it's at a certain point the story's got to be the story.
Yeah, and like you have to make certain concessions based on like what you can do with special effects, what needs to happen naturally.
Right.
Yeah. It's like,
and let's be fair. They didn't do sound in space, so let's just give them, you know, that's enough at this point, right? Because nobody,
it's not near enough.
No, but it's like, it's just, you know, there's so many things in this movie. Overwhelmingly, it is striving for accuracy. It is striving for an experiential.
And you know, I haven't seen it, but it seems like it certainly achieves scientific plausibility, and is what is important. It's not complete 100% scientific accuracy. It's that everything in it is completely plausible.
Right. Yeah. Like, you know, if satellites orbited a little differently than they do now, this could happen. That kind of thing, you know. So, yeah. That's too bad. Internet is dumb.
Yeah, it's actually, just like, it just made me so mad when I saw, like, article after article after article all talking about it. I was like, shut up, you assholes. Like, you have no idea.
And because this is my podcast and do what I want to call out another podcast on something relating to that.
Okay, sure.
See, this week's Rooster Teeth podcast, normally, you know, I like the guys at Rooster Teeth, like their podcast, it's funny. Sometimes they talk out of their ass and it's the most frustrating thing in the world.
Yeah, I'm sure we do it too, and then it's really frustrating for our audience, but that never happens to us because we know everything.
Well, but I also think we strive to not talk out of our asses on these things. We do our research. But in any case, they were bitching about the Neil deGrasse Tyson thing and saying they didn't talk at all about his last tweet. They were just talking about
how... nobody did, because nobody actually... Because probably, you know, none of them actually, like, subscribe to his Twitter feed. It's just, like, what happens is, like, someone tells someone about what Neil deGrasse Tyson said on Twitter, or someone sees half the tweets, and then that person writes an article. And someone reads that article, then writes their own article, and then the information disseminates that way instead of, you know... Like, how I encountered it at first, because I actually just subscribed to his Twitter feed, was just like, oh, hey, those are some funny facts. And it's like, what happened on the internet? What?
Yeah. But anyway, they were even actually promoting the horribly incorrect information where they were saying he was saying the movie was horrible and stuff.
Yeah. That's
so true. That was annoying. And then, I mean, I didn't know at the time. I went and looked this up later and, you know, saw what you were saying. But anyway, and then... Let's see. But here's the thing I wanted to say. This was kind of funny because it made me die a little inside. The Rooster Teeth guys were talking about how, you know, they do their spoiler casts once in a while where they talk about things they like and they do spoilers and whatever. They're not very good, but it's fine. They can do what they want. But they said, we got to think of new things we should do spoiler cast on. They're like, we should do a Doctor Who one. Oh. And I died a little inside because the thought... I love you guys, Rooster Teeth, but the thought of you people doing a Doctor Who podcast makes me want to shoot myself. Because, for one, then they admitted nobody there watches Doctor Who.
Doctor Who,
so. And that the only... I'm like, Gavin only watched up to David Tennant, so yeah, they wouldn't be able to... And they're like, so... But we should still do one because people like it. And it's like... You know nothing.
That's not a good reason to do
anything. And then they just mentioned it at first. I'm like, that's... Oh, thank God you're not talking about it anymore. And then they came back to it later when talking, and just literally everything they could say wrong about Doctor Who they were saying. It was like, oh, God. Oh, God.
Yeah.
Because, again, when we talk about Doctor Who, you know, we've got someone who's seen literally every episode.
Yeah.
And someone...
That exists.
Right.
Or, like, I am about to see every episode that exists in a couple of hours from now.
Right. But, yeah, it's... And someone who has seen all the new stuff, very passionate about it, has sampled the old stuff to not, you know, talk out of my ass.
Yeah.
Like, you know, so I can say, when I talk about Tom Baker, I know what Tom Baker was like.
Yeah.
You know. But anyway, yeah. I just wanted to throw that out there, because that thought, it's horrific.
Yeah, it's just, you know, if you're doing anything creative or just anything like... If listeners at home want to make their own podcast... Just make a podcast about what you give a shit about.
Like, absolutely.
You certainly had no, like, aims to turn this podcast into a Doctor Who and Persona podcast. I did that because I love Doctor Who and I love Persona. And then, like, through that, you became to love... I mean, we reached Doctor Who at different points, but definitely Persona is like...
I actually started watching Doctor Who before you. You just went all in.
Yeah. And that was... So it doesn't, I mean, I think if you, like... Through time dilation, I think I've technically been watching Doctor Who for like 50 years now.
Right.
So who knows? But
you have spent more time watching Doctor Who.
Yeah. I actually saw a time chart on the internet someone made of like all the time that each Doctor has been on screen, and seeing those numbers of like Tom Baker, like or amount of like time like each Doctor episode like in like gross takes up. And so there's like for the fourth Doctor, it was like 78.4 hours was the longest. Just like seeing that, I was like, oh my. That's terrifying. I mean, at least I did over the course of like a year, but still just like, holy shit. And that's just the fourth Doctor, you know?
Right.
But yeah, no. Like, yeah.
That's like 12 Persona games.
only like make a podcast or something like that about something you really care about.
Yeah.
Like, I'm not going to like make a podcast about basketball. I mean, I like basketball, but I don't give like a fuck about like professional sports.
There's a reason we don't talk about professional sports.
Exactly. Like the NFL stuff is going on right now. Who cares?
No. I know the Broncos won a game. People were talking about it on Twitter.
I don't even know that. I don't care.
Yeah, I don't. Yeah. Football is one of those things that I literally could not care less about. Like, there's just a floor for that and I'm at it. Anyway,
I wish the Broncos was actually, they were just Broncos, like the horses. That would make it. Then I would watch football, because then like half the players on the other team would just die.
All right. So let me tell you about what's going on with me. We got off on a huge tangent, but in terms of like interesting things that I've been doing, I haven't really seen any movies, but I finished GTA 5, and my plan was that I have this giant backlog of games, starting with Catherine, that I really want to play, because Catherine is an Atlas game from the Persona team. It's top of my list. And I was like, I'm going to start on one of these games. But then I was reading, like, basically two games that were coming out or are coming out attracted my attention so strongly I had to put those on the back burner again and be like, I don't want the backlog to grow. If a new game's coming out and I really want to play it, I want to play it, especially because I like being in on the conversation when it happens. And the first of those was Pokemon X and Y, which comes out this Saturday. I'm getting it from Amazon, and it doesn't come till Monday because Nintendo, for some reason, releases their games on the weekend.
Japan.
Yeah.
Yeah.
No, it makes sense. I sort of, but you know, it's weird. In any case, I own every Pokemon game, main generation, or at least one of each.
Oh, okay.
But I haven't. No, I haven't.
Like, you don't own like
no.
Red and blue and yellow and like gold and silver. And, okay, because that would be terrifying.
Maybe between me and my brother, we own a lot of those.
Sure,
but not everyone. Like, I don't. I think they did a third with Diamond and Pearl, like Crystal or something. No, Crystal's gold and silver.
Yeah, that's right.
Whatever was after Diamond and Pearl. Like, my brother and I don't. I've never touched that. I don't know what it is. But Platinum. I don't know. Maybe.
That wouldn't really make sense with the Diamond Pearl stuff.
No, but in any case.
Topaz,
but Amethyst. I have not finished a new Pokemon game since Ruby and Sapphire? Yeah. because there's at least a new one. Like, remakes don't count, but like they did Diamond and Pearl. Got those. I was super excited because I still liked Pokemon after Ruby and Sapphire.
Oh, you
and
you sad, sad fool.
A lot of people like Ruby and Sapphire. It's a good one. It's, you know. No, it's, okay,
that, anyway. That's where I jumped off. So.
Okay. Diamond and Pearl was terrible. I quit those games like 10 hours in, whichever one I had. I think it was Diamond. Picked up Black when it came out because it had been several years. There was a pretty big gap between those. I was ready to try again. And I like Black. I thought it had a lot of good things. They advanced the series in some interesting ways graphically, but overall it wasn't enough. Kind of gave up on that. And I was not planning on playing Pokemon X and Y, especially because it's just a busy time of the year for games, you know? And I don't like gaming on my 3DS all that much, especially because once you go Vita, it's hard to go back because that is just such a comfortable, nice handheld.
That's true.
And the 3DS is so stuck in 2004 design aesthetics, that sort of thing. But, you know, I know there had been a lot of hype for Pokemon X and Y, a lot of news about it over the last year, and I had just not read any of it. I'd just kind of been out of that loop, out of the Pokemon loop. And then I was on some gaming site, and the headline was something about Mega Charizard X.
Yeah.
And I was pulled back in.
I don't know. I don't like the idea of the Mega Evolutions. This seems, you know, obviously, like, I haven't played a Pokemon game since... I think Emerald was the one I played, because I did not play the Ruby or Sapphire ones. But, yeah, like... I don't know. Mega Evolutions just seems weird. It seems I don't... Stay away from my Pokemon, I guess. Like, stay away from the Pokemon that matter. You know, Red and Blue... That's Pokemon.
I don't know.
Don't,
just,
I don't need a new Blastoise.
Well, and we can talk about this when the game actually comes out, and we can comment on the mechanic. All I thought was that that is something new, that's something cool, and then I started reading about some of the other things they're doing, and I was interested. And then the reviews came out last week, and I was really interested, because Pokemon reviews are typically pretty glowing. I mean, there really aren't, I don't think, you know, outright bad Pokemon games. They're up to a
specific... It's kind of like Call of Duty. That's like, it's not that they're bad, it's just like... They've become dull to you because it's like, I played this.
Right.
I played... My version of this is best because it's my nostalgic version because Red and Blue is the best one. So.
Right. Well, and, you know, specifically, I think with X and Y, these reviews, what intrigued me so much wasn't so much that they were all 9s and 10s out of 10s, you know? It was more what they were saying about it. That first, I had seen that they were doing some 3D graphics, but I didn't know this was an actual 3D game. That this is, you know, third-person... 3D moving in a you can move diagonally and stuff, you know, it's an actual
diagonal movement in a video game.
In a Pokemon
game. What year is this? 1998.
Right. Well, that's when Pokemon originally came out, and you could not move diagonally until now, 2013. It's crazy. But no, it was like I saw some of those videos and I was like, they actually revamped the entire visual system of the game. That's amazing. I would not have expected them to do that. And then like battle screens. They are what I've wanted. They are 3D representations of Pokemon. The Pokemon look fucking awesome in 3D. And they moved all the other shit down to the bottom screen, which they, for some reason, never did on the DS generation.
I didn't know
so
that.
Now, the top screen can just be visuals. Bottom screen does all text and information. It looks gorgeous. It looks really cool. And so there was that. But also, there's just some mechanic changes they've made. And one of them, I can't believe they did this. But it is so cool. One of the problems we've talked about with JRPGs, and honestly, RPGs in general, outside of like Mass Effect, is your party members level up individually.
That
always sucks. It's too bad. It's sad. Because like in Persona, whatever four people you choose at the beginning, you kind of got to stick with them.
Yeah.
Or because even though it would be fun to take Kanji into the dungeon, he's level 20, and Chie and I are both like level 60.
Yeah.
It's not going to work.
Sorry, Kanji.
And it's one of the things...
It's not going
to
work out.
I know. And it's one of the things we love about Mass Effect, because everyone levels up progressively at the same time.
Yeah.
That's really fun because then it doesn't matter so much skill wise. It's just if I want to take Rex on this mission for fun, I can take Rex.
Yeah.
You know, that sort of thing. Now, they have not implemented a Mass Effect style system into Pokemon. And I would, and I honestly, that
yeah,
would
they shouldn't
things.
Like go
no.
that far.
But here's what they've done. There was an item, and I think it was introduced in Ruby and Sapphire, called EXP Share.
Yeah.
You could put it in Ruby, you got it after you beat the game. And you could put it on a Pokemon, and whatever your prime Pokemon was, like your main party Pokemon that you fought with, half of
your starter Pokemon.
Yeah,
let's just be fucking honest.
Yes.
It's the one Pokemon that you use for the whole game, just one with. So.
Yeah. Your half of its EXP in every battle will then go to whatever Pokemon has EXP Share. They've completely revamped EXP Share, and now it's something you get, apparently, 3 hours into the game. It applies to your whole party, and it does not diminish your prime party Pokemon's XP.
Prime party Pokemon.
But half of that XP amount goes to all other five Pokemon. Great. That is
yes.
so
Thank you.
Great.
Like, that, at the very least, just makes it so it's like,
you can use different Pokemon.
Yeah, exactly. Like, that's always been one of the biggest problems with Pokemon. Like I just facetiously said, that it's just your starter your Pokemon. Right. Is this all you need, realistically, except for unless you're, like, you picked Charmander, and then, you know, you end up at the fucking water gym, and that's the second gym, and your Charmander's not high level enough to just, like, bulldoze through it anyways, then you have to, oh, okay, I'm going to get, like, an Oddish or something, you know, and just, like, destroy them that way. Yeah, like, being able to do what Pokemon's supposed to fucking be, which is you have a team of six Pokemon that all, like, back each other up in a different way. That's like, okay, right. I can have my fire Pokemon, my lightning Pokemon, my water Pokemon, and they're all good for different situations. So in a battle, I can swap them in and out. But in practice, to actually do that in the old games,
you had to grind like shit.
Yeah, exactly. And it was the most intolerable thing imaginable of just, I'm just going to walk into grass for 5 years and just kill Pidgeys.
Yes.
And I'm going to drive the like normal Pokemon population to extinction, but that at the very least I will now have two Pokemon that I can use instead of just one. You know.
Well, yeah, and it's just now at the very least those other five will be equal.
Yeah.
And you can swap them in and have fun that way, and that will be such an improvement. That is so cool. They've revamped kind of the elemental elements of the battle system. They've deepened those things. Mega evolutions, how they specifically function in battle, is that your Pokemon's element changes. And things happen with that. And it just sounds like they've deepened a lot of those systems. The story is still 8 gyms and Elite Four, and that bores me a little bit.
It's still Pokemon. It's a Nintendo game. Let's not get crazy.
No.
It's going to follow the same basic structure that every Nintendo game has. Like, the first Nintendo game establishes what that Nintendo game will be for the rest of its life.
Yeah. And I'll be honest, I don't know if any of this would be completely enough if I were not a journalist and did not have a podcast or something and did not try to keep up with current games. Mm-hmm. I probably still would have put this off. But because I do have those things and the game's coming out and I liked Pokemon Once Upon a Time very much and they've done a lot of the things I've been asking the series for, totally. I'm really excited to play this game. So, yeah, it's coming on, Monday from Amazon. I like having portable games to play. I spend a lot of my time up here in Boulder on campus, and I need time to kill, and makes it easier to attack an RPG that's, like, 30 hours long, you know? So, yeah, I just did not expect to be playing a Pokemon game again, and I'm really impressed with what I'm hearing so far, and I hope it lives up to that.
Mm-hmm.
I'd love to play another really good Pokemon game. Although, here's a weird thing.
Sure, yeah.
It is... This is so funny. All the descriptions are, it's a 3D Pokemon game. They finally made a 3D Pokemon game. Guess which 3DS feature this game does not employ?
Does not use 3D?
No.
Well,
except
why?
In battle scenes, and then it crashes the frame rate to single digits and you have to turn it off.
Huh. Well. Huh. I guess Nintendo just doesn't give a fuck about the 3D on 3DS.
Well, here's what it is. They said there is... I've read from reviews that it is pushing the 3DS hardware so far, there is occasional slowdown. And like, never crippling unless you have the 3D on, but that's probably why 3D is not on for the majority of the game, is it would just break the game. And that's a little disappointing to hear that a fucking Pokemon game is too powerful for your hardware.
Yeah, exactly.
That is
a badge
of shame.
Like, I'm just trying to think about, like, the frame rate being poor in a Pokemon game just seems so baffling to me, just, like, conceptually.
Yes.
And partially just because, like, when I played Pokemon games, I didn't even know what frame rate was.
They don't have frame rates. You're just, it's just pixels moving around a screen.
So it's just like, that's just, it's a weird thing to think about. Like, oh god, I don't want, like, fucking every time I use Hyper Beam, my frame rate tanks to, like, 12 frames per second. It's just like, yeah, that's weird.
Yeah.
That gives me a weird feeling in my stomach.
Oh, and here's something that made me feel old this week.
Yeah.
Talking about Pokemon. Well, I was kind of... When I had read about X and Y, I was kind of interested. I went and broke out my old Game Boy systems, and I was kind of looking through some of my Pokemon cartridges and seeing where was I in some of these games, just for fun. I was bored on an afternoon. And my Ruby cartridge and my, I think, Leaf Green cartridge, the battery is dead in both of them.
Hmm.
And so it cannot... It can save, but it cannot keep any internal time stuff. So they're totally fucked up. Like, it thinks I've played 99.99 hours or something in both. It's really like
when I played the original Persona on my Vita, where it doesn't... When you put the Vita to sleep, it would not stop the in-game clock. So I finished that game with, like, 99959 on it. On the in-game clock. It was great.
Nice. But yeah, it was kind of funny to look at those. But anyway, so I'll talk about that on the podcast next week. For now, the other game I was in no way, like... agnostic towards or anything. I was just agnostic.
I didn't know about it. Like, yeah. It's just like, it could be a game, it could not be a game, it might exist, it might not exist. I don't know. agnostic.
No, I was not...
You're atheistic towards it, is what you mean to say, right?
Right.
Yeah.
Well, no, what I was not antagonistic towards was Beyond Two Souls, which is the new PS3 exclusive, kind of the last big PS3 exclusive before the PS4 comes out. And I had thought this game looked really interesting, but I was... I don't know. There have been a lot of games lately, and I wasn't necessarily going to pick it up.
Yeah.
But then they put out a demo. And I like game demos when they put them out, because I like... That's a better thing for games. That's what a trailer should be to me.
Yeah. Effectively.
Yeah, because games are not a passive medium. This is why I don't watch game trailers. Game trailers make no sense to me. Gaming is not a passive medium.
I mean, but on the one hand, like, you have to wait till the game is almost done, realistically, to put out a demo.
And I know. And what I was just saying...
Like, you need to have trailers.
No, and I see the practical reason. They just don't interest me. Yeah. That's all. But, yeah, and so I got the demo because, you know, it's free, whatever, I'll try it out. Surprisingly, it was a pretty substantial demo, at least an hour or more of gameplay. And, I liked it so much, I turned it off 45 minutes in because I'm like, I'm going to buy this game. I don't want to see any more of it.
Mm-hmm.
But the demo blew me away. I just want to say that right now. If you are on the fence about buying this, try out the demo. From what I've played of the actual game, I think it seems pretty representative. And I just... There's some things they do, like, and I have not played a Quantic Dream game before.
Yeah. So this is the developer that, if you don't know, like, I think their first game, or like their first, like, kind of big game was Indigo Prophecy, or it's called Fahrenheit in Europe, and I played a little bit of that one, but then, like, their biggest game, the one that everyone would have heard of, is Heavy Rain, and I played that to completion.
Right, and I have not played Heavy Rain, but Beyond Two, you know, I've always heard that they had this kind of cinematic meets video game style, but when I played the Beyond Two Souls demo and then the game, it's really, really impressive. Like, the first and most gripping thing is, obviously, the graphics. They are the best I've seen this generation, I think. The facial animation in Beyond Two Souls is the best and most real... Or it's at least the most realistic facial animation I've ever seen. More so than, like, a Hollywood movie like Robert Zemeckis' Beowulf or something that used facial motion capture, and those looked horrible, so it's not a good comparison, but Beyond Two Souls just looks amazing. You can see it running right up to the limits of what the PS3 can do. You know, Last of Us in GTA 5 style.
Yeah.
And then... But more than that, I was really into this. The story and performances are really good. And in talking about cinematically, the whole game is framed in anamorphic widescreen, 2.4 to 1. And that is such a complete reconceptualization of video game space to me. Because I talk about this a lot in my reviews. Hollywood... And maybe I'll get into this more in depth if I actually review the game, but because this is very nerdy. But Hollywood shoots a lot of their movies these days in this is the widescreen 2.4:1 anamorphic scope. You see it in most action movies and stuff, and most directors just flat out don't know how to shoot for it. They basically shoot like they're shooting for a 1.85:1 screen. That's the same as your TV 16:9, just with the tops and bottoms cut off, so it's super cramped. And so a lot of frames in Hollywood now are super cramped. But the point of an anamorphic frame, I mean, it comes from the term anamorphic lens, which allows you to shoot a lot of space and have everything be in focus and everything be sort of, you know, really nice and detailed. And Beyond Two Souls is framed like a fucking anamorphic movie, even during gameplay. Amazing to me. I could not even conceive of that before playing this game. And it really drew me in, because it's a different way to visualize it space-wise. I thought the controls were really interesting. Like, it's, you know, it's very interactive. It's not you're just sitting there and occasionally you do a button press. It's not, and really it's not even quick time event-y. It's not like
it's,
that.
It's honestly like one more recent game that gets compared to the Quantic Dream style games a lot is The Walking Dead. Like Beyond Two Souls, or at least Heavy Rain, is far more interactive than The Walking Dead was. Like it's completely interactive, effectively.
And I've played like episode one of The Walking Dead, and Beyond Two Souls is more interactive, and it's controls better too. It's really interesting that way, but and I think it doesn't have the same level of like choice where, you know, you have conversations and you pick the options. There's a little bit of that, although I think choice is important to the game. But anyway, with the demo,
at least Heavy Rain, it's tremendously important. Heavy Rain.
But anyway, in what was I talking about, in Beyond Two Souls, in the demo, what really drew me in was the things I just talked about, the story, that this was just... This felt to me like something I'd never seen. Story, not necessarily story-wise, but definitely presentation-wise. It didn't feel like a game or a movie. It felt like something else. And I really wanted to try this out. I can't even quite describe the impact that demo had to me. I quit playing it, went online, researched where I should pre-order it, and pre-ordered it. And I was so excited, I even consented to go into GameStop.
What?
Because
they had
a really good pre-order package that was only at GameStop. I got to pre-order it online, so I didn't have to go in twice. But this is, they had a steelbook. I got a steelbook here. That's kind of nice.
With Ellen Page on it.
Yes, got Ellen Page. Fucking great in this game. But anyway, what it actually has is mostly it's a DLC code package. Mm-hmm. But it's got an extra 30-minute gameplay scene, which I have not played yet. It's got, you know, dynamic PSN avatars and themes and whatnot. Yeah, so all that stuff.
Standard, yes.
It's got the soundtrack like The Last of Us pre-order had, which is nice.
Yes, I hope that trend continues into the next generation.
I love that. Well, Killzone
soundtracks with pre-orders.
Killzone Shadowfall has that. The pre-order, awesome. Yeah, full sound. This is like a 20-minute soundtrack, but it's all that's out of music-wise of the game anyway. So it's nice. And it's got a bunch of making of videos and stuff. So I thought, that's worth a trip to GameStop. There's one right in Boulder, right where I go to, next to, you know, where I drive home. So I thought it wouldn't be a problem. But in any case,
except for you have to go into GameStop.
No, it's never a pleasant experience.
Yeah, it's like, but every time I go to GameStop, it's like, which I haven't gone to GameStop in like a year, but I had to just immediately go home and take a shower because everything about that place, like just conceptually, like,
I know,
ideologically, and just like physically, is disgusting. It's just a disgusting place. All the people there are disgusting. The ideas behind the business is disgusting. Fuck GameStop.
I know, but anyway,
fuck you for going to GameStop and giving them money.
It's a good.
You're part of the problem.
It's a good game, man. So anyway, Beyond Two Souls, when it came out, I started playing the game. Then I looked at some reviews, and reviews have been really divisive. Some people, yeah. I haven't seen anyone.
I mean, this is kind of like what all Quantic Dreams games are like, is that they're very divisive.
And I'll say I have not seen anyone outright hate it. Like, no one's panned this game and been like, this was awful. But a lot of people have been like, I was disappointed. And I completely understand every criticism. And if I do review this one, I might be writing a review for the site. We'll see. And if I review it on the podcast later, I don't know how I could recommend this game. I can only tell you my experience with it. Because I think it's going to be really subjective. And, you know,
But I also, based on Indigo Prophecy and Heavy Rain, Quantic Dream has a tendency, like, I don't know if Beyond Two Souls is actually going to do this, they have a tendency of falling apart in the third act. Like, it's especially Indigo Prophecy goes fucking crazy. Like, okay. if you want to have a fun 5 minutes, type in Indigo Prophecy into Wikipedia and just read the plot summary. It is fucking amazing. It is so good. But yeah, like, my problem with the Quantic Dream's games, and I do really like Heavy Rain in particular. I think it does a lot of good things, but it's like the presentation style, like you're talking about, is really cool. And like, it's a really cool idea. The only problem is, I don't think David Cage, who's like, he's kind of like the auteur behind Quantic Dreams, I don't think he's a very good storyteller. Especially when it gets to the end, when he has to wrap stuff up. He's just not very good at it.
Well, I'll talk about the game. But I'm probably like 4 hours in. It's like a 10-hour game. I really, really like it so far. I don't necessarily love it because I have to hold. It is the landing has to be stuck on this one.
Yeah.
Or not. It has to be at least like even if the ending is bad, it wouldn't ruin the game for me in any way. But I do, before I say anything about my overall opinion, I do need to see the whole thing through because it is completely story driven, obviously. Yeah. But overall, I feel like I've heard that about David Cage before, and I do think in Beyond Two Souls, particularly so far, my biggest, it's not a complaint yet, it could be, we'll see, is that he does rely on cliche to a certain degree, where the story has some ideas that I've never seen before, and I think it's got some really smart stuff, and it's very provocative in some ways, but it's also tied down to, in some senses, story points that I've seen so many times, even though they're done very well here, I feel like, it doesn't quite seem to reach that full potential line. But in the chapters where it does, this game is amazing to me. It really is. I played a chapter last night, and the game is like structured with chapters. It's all out of order chronologically, and it's got this, basically the loading screen is this timeline, and it's really cool. You start kind of, at least where I am now, you started the game kind of in the end, in media res, and that's the prologue, and that's on the furthest, not the furthest end of the timeline, but near the end. And then everything else, it kind of, each chapter after you play it, it shows you where that was on the timeline.
Or, it's like Final Fantasy 13-2, except for do you go like 400,000 years in the future?
No, okay. It's just within this protagonist's life, Jodie Holmes. And anyway, that's kind of cool. And I think the pacing of the game is fantastic. It's really, really well paced. Like, you do not get bored playing the game, because in those first 3 hours, you're going through chapters like every 20, 30 minutes. They dole out tutorial really intelligently. And then when they start, and then they get into long chapters. Like, the one I'm on right now is probably 90 minutes to 2 hours, and I'm not even finished with it yet. But it's really good. It's sort of Jodie, it's this time in her life when she's very, very down. That's all I'll say. And it is extremely well written. It has extremely good side characters, and it's not quite like anything I've seen before. And for the most part, the basic premise is Jodie Holmes, she's played by Ellen Page. Since she was born, this entity lives inside her named Aiden. Aiden. Ellen Page pronounces it both ways, so I'm not sure what it is.
Like, I think it's Aiden, because that's the name of the protagonist from Watch Dogs, as Aiden appears.
Nice! Yeah. So we're going to have two games with Aiden.
It's Aiden. All of a sudden, that name's just super popular, right. I guess.
And you play as either Jody or Aiden. You kind of work together. Obviously, Aiden is bound to her, but can move around. It's a ghost story, really.
Yeah.
And Aiden comes from this other side, we think, and there's these monsters from this other side that have been haunting her whole life. But in any case, that's sort of the premise. And so when it does go through cliched parts, like you see her first kiss and you go to her first party and stuff, that's not the best like teenage party scene I've ever seen, and it rushes through every teenage party scene cliche. But because the protagonist is so unique and the premise is so unique, I think it works. And as I'll always say, and I know the cliche is a bigger deal for some people than it is for others, for me, it's not as much the story being told as it's how you tell it. And this game tells its story very, very, very well. And overall, I'm still waiting. I think there's been some great, great scenes. I'm still waiting to see if it kicks into the higher gear where I could describe this as a great game rather than a very good one consistently. So we'll see. And maybe it goes down a notch. Maybe it goes up. I'll say it has, as I said, unbelievable production values. Just incredible. It looks, again, it looks better than any motion capture Hollywood movie. Ellen Page, this could be the performance of her career. She is phenomenal in it, and she really is acting. It's like The Last of Us in the level of performance the people behind those CGI faces have. And Willem Dafoe, who is a much more minor character than I would have thought.
His name is straight up on the box. Like, I know. Movie poster style.
Well, see, I knew so little about this game before I played the demo. I thought he voiced Aiden. Aiden doesn't have a voice. Huh. He plays like Ellen Page's mentor figure.
I like how you have called Aiden both Aiden and Aiden over the course of this podcast.
I know. But no,
so now it's understandable why Ellen Page would as well.
Yes. Anyway, Willem Dafoe is just tremendous, just warm and heartfelt, and just it's a great Willem Dafoe performance. And it's not Willem Dafoe being big and hammy.
That's not a good Willem Dafoe performance. Oh. That's not what I want. I want sleep.
Yeah, I was trying to. Yeah.
That's what I want. I want Green Goblin, crazy fucking Willem Dafoe. Well, that's what I want.
I haven't finished the game. Okay, maybe that's when the game goes off the rails, as he becomes the Green Goblin and it's a Spider-Man tie-in.
Hopefully, yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah, sure.
That'd be great.
Fuck it.
Yeah. Ellen Page could be in a Spider-Man movie. That'd be great.
Yeah.
Good actress. Anyway, so far, I really like the game.
Ellen Page played. Kitty Pryde, right? Yeah. In the Ultimate Universe, Kitty Pryde dated Spider-Man for a short while.
Nice.
So there you go. It's already done. If you need another love interest, another character to throw into the Amazing Spider-Man movies, fuck it, there you go.
Yeah.
It's a free one for you.
And she's coming back in X-Men Days of Future Past.
Exactly! It all works. It all works together.
Yes.
Anyways, continue with Beyond the Souls.
It's good. The music, which is co-written at least by Hans Zimmer, phenomenal music. Really, all of it really strikes me. I think it's a really interesting approach to interactive storytelling. You know, I think the sort of best model of interactive storytelling, I think, from this generation is still possibly something like The Last of Us, where it's not like this game. It is gameplay heavy, obviously, but you do feel so 100% like you are Joel and like you are Ellie.
Yeah.
And this game, this is not what this game is going for.
Yeah.
But you are not supposed to feel like you are Jodie Holmes. But you do have control over her life. Choice, I think, is something really interesting in the game where just scenes... I don't know if the overall progression of the game changes because of choice, but I know individual scenes, it is fascinating how you think about, man, if I had not done that, this scene would be so different. And I played one scene in the demo completely different than I played it in the game. And I wasn't even aware of that until I got to the end of the scene and I realized that was just completely different. And my interpretation of the scene is completely different.
I mean, that is definitely one thing, like going back to The Walking Dead, like at least with Heavy Rain, that is obviously it's a very similar style to Beyond Two Souls, is that, I feel like the choices feel so much more natural and their effects feel so much more significant to me in Heavy Rain as compared to, like, The Walking Dead, where it's, or even a game like Mass Effect, even, where it's done very well in Mass Effect, but it feels very in-your-face and blatant, whereas with, like, Heavy Rain or Beyond Two Souls, it's like, you're just going through the scene. Like, you're just acting how you would, and, like, every single moment could potentially be a branch, and you have no idea whether or not it's going to be a branch. And, the scenes can go... Because I only played Heavy Rain once, so maybe... Like, I know it has a bunch of different endings, but maybe most scenes only go one way. but like at least it feels like this could have ended up like a thousand different ways.
I mean, it's as little as in one of the first scenes, you're young Jody and you're being asked to leave your room and come with this person, and you could pick up a toy and things like that, and just the way you decide to move fast through that scene or not, like keep playing with your toys or kind of shrug and not respond to the adults.
Or use your Aiden ghost powers to just kill every motherfucker in there and just leave.
And the first Aiden scene really is one where you get to, and I think Aiden is the character you get to roleplay as, because my Aiden winds up being very playful but also destructive, but you don't have to make him that way at all. There are some scenes where you, and it's when you do, and I'm running through my head, every scene where you can be really destructive, that is choice. It is not thrust upon you so far. So cool. Hopefully next week, it's a short game. I'll be done with it soon. I'm really excited to talk about it in more depth. It is really, really good.
Yeah. Definitely so curious about it. Like, I hope it doesn't fall apart the way that Heavy Rain and Indigo Prophecy did.
Yeah.
Because, it's definitely really cool thing. I want more games like that. I would to try that style.
And I would maybe David Cage works with a co-writer, and or Quantic Dream brings in someone else who feels like they have a story to tell in this format, because I would like to see more stories told like this. Yeah. That's what I would say. And definitely, especially seeing that they could do this on the friggin' PS3, what they could do with this format on the PS4, I can't even imagine. For all we know, it could just be a live action, and you could be controlling live Willem Dafoe, and you could make him go sleep. It'd be great.
Oh my god, yes, like Sega CD games, motherfucker, but now on PS4 for just really no reason whatsoever. That'd be awesome. Just straight up, just have it be live action. Like, there we go. Done. Like, let's bring the Sega CD era back.
No, but anyway, alright, we've been talking for a long time about random stuff. Let's talk about some Doctor Who news, Sean.
Okay, sure.
Alright, so we have not talked about this on the podcast yet because it was all rumors and speculation.
Yeah.
But there have been all summer long into the fall now, people have been saying that different journalists have been saying they have sources saying that Doctor Who episodes have been recovered. And as a bit of background, do you want to tell the kids the horrible tragedy that befell Doctor Who?
Yes. So, as you all know, November 23rd, 1963, a show came out, Doctor Who. It's the greatest show of all time, that it's fucking still going on now. But it's a very, very old show, and the BBC, with very, very old shows at some point, they were all shot on video. They destroyed all of them, basically. All the ones that matter, because they had William Hartnell, who was on the show for 4 years, then Patrick Troughton, who was on the show for 3 years, and then John Pertwee took over, and that's when it went to color. And past that point, we've lost like a couple of color episodes, I believe, from Inferno, from John Pertwee's era. But past that point, we have everything, because I guess the policies must have changed at that point. But a significant number of the latter-day William Hartnell and era ones, and almost all of the Patrick Troughton ones from seasons 1 and 2, we still have a significant portion of season 3. Those are just completely lost because they've been destroyed, or we believe they've been lost. And for a long time, even more were lost and believed completely destroyed. But over time, BBC and a lot of fans have recovered bits and pieces of episodes. So it's like we have like weird ones like The Wheel in Space, that has like episodes like 3 and 5 of like the 6-episode serial exist.
Or
for the most part, most of those are just gone.
Yeah, and the other places they can be recovered from is obviously BBC operated in more than just Great Britain.
Yeah.
They had offices in other countries, in other parts of Britain, and maybe they had recordings because they couldn't just transmit the one tape.
Yeah.
Copies had to be made.
Mm-hmm.
So the masters were destroyed, but copies for a lot of these, and they're probably more than we have now, do exist in the world.
Yeah.
And that we learned about this today. But anyway, go on.
There is one silver lining to that this horrible, horrible tragedy that the best Doctor Who episodes no longer exist in the original format is, at the very least, for some reason, people back in that day were weird and because they didn't have fucking video recorders, but they would record the audio of the episodes, like on a device. And so it's like we have the audio from all of those episodes, and then like production stills of like photos taken from the set also exist. So the BBC has made some official ones, and then like a lot of these are fan reconstructions of these episodes exist. So you can watch and experience all the episodes in some form, which is what I've done, with like weird little subtitles to tell you about like character, like kind of stage directions basically, because I think most of the scripts also still exist, and then you like get all the audio. So it's not a great way to experience them, but it is a way to experience them. But it definitely is like, I think in particular, Marco Polo, which is one of the William Hartnell ones, is one that's just like, it's really sad that one doesn't exist, because it could very well be one of the best episodes of Doctor, like serials of Doctor Who of all time, just based on like because I had to watch that completely through Reconstruction because I don't believe any of those episodes exist. It's a long serial, and it's like I think it's like his third or fourth episode. It's a very early one. And it's just it's so clear, so much production value went into that, and the writing is so good, and the pacing for an old Doctor Who episode is just incredible. Like, it's completely unlike any other Doctor Who serial from that time, and that even just watching it in this really imperfect reconstruction format, it's completely entertaining, and if it's something that you can tolerate, I would recommend watching it. Like, if you are curious about whether or not you could get into reconstructed episodes of Doctor Who, Marco Polo's one of the ones to start with, because I think it's actually the first one that you'd hit on the list, but it's also one of the best. But yeah, it's a sad situation. The BBC are horrible people. They should all, everyone involved in that process should just be burned alive like those tapes. Like, I think that would be poetic, you know? It's just desserts, but yeah.
Well, as I've always said, the series finale of Doctor Who will be when they are so out of ideas that the Doctor goes back to BBC,
yeah,
seriously, the 1960s, and stops them from junking his tapes.
Yeah. Motherfuckers.
And it would just be so cripplingly sad,
yeah,
to acknowledge that on Doctor Who the show would just end.
Yeah.
I think, though, you know, 12th Doctor Peter Capaldi would be perfect to do that because he could swear like a motherfucker, yeah,
exactly,
at them. Bring some Malcolm Tucker into the show. All right. But no, so yeah, lots of rumors floating around all summer from they have found a few episodes to
Have found like 100 episodes, and then when I saw that, it's like that's basically all the ones that are gone is like 109 or something. So
107 were
107.
Gone. And that's, yeah, that's impossible. As I said to Sean before the podcast, I think if somewhere in the world is sitting all 107 missing episodes of Doctor Who, BBC would have found that.
Fuck that, not the BBC, like Doctor Who fans would have found it, like, yeah, way before the BBC.
Right.
We are a rabid, ferocious bunch, us, like, old Doctor, yes, Who fans that would be interested in this.
But earlier this week, Radio Times and the Daily Mail put out a report that said, hey, this was sort of the most definitive news source for this yet, that they had found episodes, something was going to happen, and then yesterday, we're recording this on Thursday night, so Wednesday of this week, BBC News said BBC has found some episodes, and there will be a press conference tomorrow. They're going to talk about this. Mm-hmm. And indeed, there was a press conference today, Thursday, October 10th. Fraser Hines was there, Mark Gatiss, who's a modern-day Doctor Who writer, and some other people, and they announced that they have found the entirety of The Enemy of the World, which is a Patrick Troughton.
These are both Patrick Troughton
series.
Because, I mean, statistically, it's most likely to be.
Right. So, and these are both six-episode serials. They found the entirety of The Enemy of the World and the entirety of The Web of Fear minus episode 5, which is still missing. And so these are two Patrick Troughton stories, which is awesome because, you know,
yeah, because he's the best Doctor, obviously, out of all of them. So,
well, and you know, I haven't watched enough Patrick Troughton to make that determination personally, like which is my favorite. But he's the most significant, I think.
In the show's history, in terms of like what the modern Doctor Who is. I mean, you know, that's a weird thing to say because there's only one Doctor before him. But like the direction all the succeeding Doctor Who actors of the Doctor like took, with maybe the exception of Colin Baker, was a lot more William Hartnell. All of them took so much from Patrick Troughton's performance.
Oh yeah, and especially the modern Doctors.
Yeah,
you know,
especially
Chris,
like Matt Smith in particular,
yeah,
is,
oh yeah,
it's like very clearly taking a lot of stuff from Patrick Troughton, including the bow tie.
Right, bow ties are cool because, yeah, Patrick Troughton said so.
Exactly.
Right, that's why they're cool.
Exactly. Yes.
And I mean, they pay so much homage to that in, mm-hmm, modern Doctor Who. But anyway, so this is pretty cool. And they, not only are they found them and they've announced them, they are out now to buy on the iTunes store in the UK, the US, and several other countries. They're putting out The Web of Fear or Enemy of the World on DVD sometime soon, I think in December.
It's 22nd
November, right before the 50th, yeah, anniversary. And The Web of Fear will come out on DVD in 2014. The Web of Fear, Episode 5, is missing. What they've provided is an official reconstruction.
Yeah.
So I'm sure it's pretty high quality.
Yeah, the official reconstruction is usually pretty good.
Yeah. So they're in iTunes. They are not indexed yet. If you search for them, you will not find them. Sean and I checked this. Maybe by the time this podcast, yeah, comes out, they will be. But if you just go to the TV shows page, they're actually at the top of the page, which is kind of cool.
Yeah.
They're $9.99 a pop, which is standard pricing for a six-episode serial on iTunes. Four-episode serials are $5.99. You add the extra two, add $2, it comes out to $10. So $9.99. You going to buy these?
Yes. I'm going to watch them probably tomorrow. So.
Yep. pretty fun. Maybe we can talk about this on the podcast next week. But in any case, so Sean, is this the happiest day of your life? More Patrick Troughton and Doctor Who?
Yeah, it's
up there.
This is pretty great. Like I just wish we had more of them. You know, it's a bittersweet day because it's like, yes, we got something, but it's like, damn it, there's so much more out there. Like, so much of his era is missing.
Yeah, 97 more.
So fucking great. That's but this which is the Web of Fear is the first appearance of Brigadier Lethbridge Stewart, so that's cool. Like that we have his original appearance like almost in full.
Yeah, and I should say they're also putting out a ton of DVDs this year of serials that had an episode or two missing, and they've animated those episodes, like The Tenth Planet,
yeah,
the first regeneration story.
Yeah.
The last episode is missing, but they have put out a DVD in the UK at least. I think it still has yet to come out in the US. But they've animated that episode, so you can finally see that whole serial.
I wonder if they like when he actually regenerates, because we have like that's like the only thing remaining from that episode is like a clip of him going into the TARDIS, and then like the 2 to 3 second clip of him actually regenerating that was probably used in like a commercial or something, so it's saved. Yeah. It's like, I wonder if they just like straight up like don't animate the actual regeneration, just like plop that footage on there, because that's what I would do.
Right. Well, I know it's on the DVD at the very least as a bonus feature, but
it's like this 3 second clip of us like of William Hartnell turning into Patrick Troughton.
Yeah.
Yeah.
So these were found elsewhere in the world. I think there may be some indication that there could be more. This is what they had ready to announce today, because they were also releasing these today. I think it is possible there they may have more, but who knows? That's speculation.
Yeah.
I hope they do. This is really cool. You know, this is a step. It's always encouraging to think about this, because it's like there's hope. There's hope we'll get
like
more.
Who fucking knows? Like they could all be out there somewhere. Who knows? Yeah. Like we just have to.
Doctor Who knows.
Fuck up. But yeah, we just have to find them, you know? We all have to band together and just scour every last like inch of this entire fucking planet until we get all of them, and then we're done. Then humanity can we can rest, we can just watch some Doctor Who. Like, I think it really is what humanity, like, fuck all these like wars and like this like economy bullshit that all that shit's just going on. Fuck it. We just have to find the Doctor Who episodes. If you're trying to find the meaning of life, there are few better meanings and purposes to take on in your life than recovering lost Doctor Who episodes. So fucking get out there, guys.
I mean, what we really need to do is work on building a time machine.
Yeah,
so we can go and stop it.
Yeah, sure.
Yeah.
I think it'll be easier to find the rest of the Doctor Who episodes than building a time machine, but
science.
But if we do build the time machine, then that would mean that that those episodes would be recovered, because we would have found them and then saved them, and then we would have them today, right now, at this very moment.
That's a good point.
They would already be here.
Fuck, we're never going to have time travel.
Yeah.
No, but I hope I can watch these too, and we can talk about them. This sounds like fun. I love the Colonel, the Lethbridge Stewart, so I'm really excited to see more of him.
And one of the fucking just great things about modern society is the fact that they found these episodes, and then that we don't have to wait for a DVD release to see them, that they can just be out on iTunes now.
Yeah.
It was like, because I was thinking about this when there were all the rumors about like these Doctor Who episodes came out, of like, I wonder how they would release these, because what I would do is just like immediately just put them out on iTunes. I'm glad that they've basically done that, like obviously clean them up a bit and stuff and make them suitable. It's like, yes, like they would be so agonizing if it was like, you know, that one that's the Enemy of the World that's coming, or Web of Fear that's coming out in 2014. It's like, that would be the most agonizing wait to just be like, they have it. I know they fucking have it. Just fucking give it to me. I don't want to wait a year for you to put together a DVD release. I'm sure the DVD release is going to be great, but I want to just fucking watch the goddamn thing.
And that DVD might not come out in the US.
Because who knows?
They come out on delay or not at all here. So the UK has more of these.
Yeah.
But
I'm glad they rightly went to digital distribution for some of that stuff, and just like, fuck it, let's just put it on iTunes and people can watch it.
So, and you know, this is just a nice icing on the cake for the 50th anniversary year, right?
Yeah.
Because we've got so much left that's so exciting. The 50th anniversary special, Matt Smith's final episode, which just finished shooting. He is no longer the Doctor. Sad. We'll talk about that in December.
Yeah.
I don't know if we talked about this on the podcast. There is a title now for the 50th anniversary special. They waited a really long time to announce it, but it's The Day of the Doctor. Yeah. We probably should have guessed that. That seems pretty obvious.
We don't get that confused with Day of the Daleks. That's a story. I keep on thinking it's Day of the Doctor, but I'm like, no, that's Day of the Daleks. Like, it's got to be something else. But no, it's Day of the Doctor.
Which I think is a good title. So I'm excited. Yeah. I like the poster with Matt Smith and David Tennant. That gets me pumped. I'm excited to see those guys together. I'm excited to be really, really sad at Christmas when Matt Smith leaves. Yeah. And then really excited when Peter Capaldi comes on. And I'm like, yeah, we'll get to, in like 2 years, we'll get to see more.
Yeah.
More Doctor.
Whatever. By the time he's the Doctor, we'll have all the Patrick Troughton episodes. So then I don't even need to watch New Doctor Who anymore, because I'll just keep on watching those forever in loop. That'll just be my life. So.
Yes. So in any case, exciting news. Let's move on to something else. I think the last thing on our agenda is let's talk GTA 5.
Yes, let's finish this. It's this long ongoing discussion that I don't believe we thought this would take three podcasts to put this one to bed, but it's time.
So here's what I want to do, Sean.
Okay.
I want to start with, as we always do, let's go macro down to micro.
Okay.
Let's start with, now that we've both played the game, we've had time to let it sit, final thoughts kind of as an overview.
Yeah, so I mean, I basically did this on, because by the time we did the last podcast, I had just finished the game. And my thoughts on the game have not particularly changed since then. Like, I still think it's a really good game in a lot of ways. I think its biggest problem to me by far is that the story ends up being disappointing. I don't think the story is really terrible by any stretch of the imagination. I think it's, by conventional standards for most video games, I think it's actually a very good story, just in that it's very well written, the dialogue is very well written, the acting is very good, and a lot of it is really fucking funny, and most games don't even get that far. But by the standards of what I felt they achieved with Grand Theft Auto 4 and Red Dead Redemption on the story side, I don't think they hit those highs at all. Like, not even close. They didn't even try to. Like, ultimately, the story felt unambitious to me in its conclusion, and that's tremendously disappointing, but I don't think that necessarily takes away from how much fun I had playing the game, and still have fun just existing in that world. And to me, that is by far GTA 5's biggest achievement, is that I think out of all of their games, it's the most fun to just play. I think they've gotten better at that with each successive game. I think this is... I like just being in this world. I like just driving around. I just like doing stuff in Los Santos and the northern regions of Los Santos. And so, and I still think it's a great game, but the story's disappointing.
And I wish I could be as positive as you are on it overall. I really do, because there are things I like about it. If you go back to our first podcast 2 weeks ago where we talked about GTA 5, I stand by most of what I said there about the mechanics. I think it's fun to drive. I love how detailed the world is. It's a beautiful-looking game. It's fun to just be in, for the most part. But for me, there are gameplay things that hold it back, and we'll talk about those. Those are fairly minor to me overall, but they do impact it to me. And the story was not just disappointing to me. I outright do not like the campaign in GTA 5. And there are things about it that do not... There's a lot of things I don't like. I think it's... What I would say is, when we talked about Man of Steel, remember?
Yeah.
And you said you did not necessarily think it was a bad movie. But you said you did not like it. You knew that much.
It's a terrible fucking Superman movie. I can tell you that much.
Okay.
That's for damn sure.
Well, in any case, but you know... Right. But anyway, this is how I feel about GTA 5, is that I don't know, and I don't think it's a bad... God, how do you even define game in this sense? Because there's such a clear split between the open world side, the just fun sandbox of it, and the campaign. And when I say the game, just default, no, I'm talking about the campaign.
Okay.
Because I've over the last few years become someone with games where it really is a story delivery medium to me, where I want it to be engaging gameplay-wise, I want to have fun with it to a certain degree, but the emotional impact of it, the story, the intellectual side of games is much more important to me at this point in my life.
I mean, it is for me too.
Yeah, and GTA 5 doesn't deliver on any of those for me at all, and I don't like the campaign. I got, you know, when we first talked about it, I said, I think I had played about, you know, maybe 7 hours, and I said, I'm starting to see some seams, but I want to hold off judgment. That was our first podcast. And then last week it was, I don't want to finish this game. It's dull to me. I'm really struggling to get through it. I finally did get through it. And I think I said this on Twitter, and this really sums up my entire thoughts on GTA 5, is I have never gotten so deep into a game and cared so little. I have never gotten so deep into a narrative experience and cared so little. And that could be because usually I would give up, and for professional reasons I kept playing. But to get 35 hours into GTA 5 and realize I have no emotional connection to these characters, the story is going nowhere. They have no interest in really doing any arcs with these characters. They have no interest in tying this off in a cumulative way. And the ending has no interest in being cumulative on everything that came before. That staggered me, that you can get that far into a narrative experience and it be so nothing. And so much be set up and just go nowhere to me. And that bothered me, and I think ultimately you know, I want to talk about some of the violence and sexism and stuff in this game, because I do think the lack of narrative and thematic payoff throughout bothered me on that level, because it goes to extreme places and to me does not justify them.
Okay, sure. I want to have this goddamn conversation. Let's
do you want to have it right now?
Yes. Let's start with it? Fucking on the podcast. Let's do this now. Full on spoilers. We're going in balls deep now. Grand Theft Auto 5, like I said, this is it. We are finishing our discussion on this game. This is our trilogy of Grand Theft Auto 5 discussion. We have both finished the game and it is time to go. Let's do it, motherfucker.
Okay. Do you want me to bring up an issue and I'll tell you my
thoughts? Yes, I don't necessarily agree with, like, you know, we'll get into specifics of just, like, saying that the, like, because I didn't care and not at all about the characters at the end of the game. I don't think there was nothing thematic. I don't think there was no character arc. And I definitely was invested. I just don't think, but like as kind of I said on the last podcast, I was invested in the same way I'm invested in something like Die Hard or something like an action movie. It's just like, it has these very basic thematic and character arc aspects to it, but it doesn't necessarily, you know, it's not fine art. It's not trying to like push a like strong message home the way I feel Red Dead or Grand Theft Auto 4 definitely were.
Well, but let me explain my point a little more, just to listeners who haven't heard me say this before on Twitter or something. My point about the game and its length and stuff is that I understand where you're coming from with the invested in it like a Die Hard or something.
Yeah.
And I would be fine with that if GTA 5 were a 12-hour campaign and then a big open world. Because 12 hours into the game, I still liked it a lot.
I think it's same. Probably the 12-hour, like, the campaign is probably about 12 hours. Like, I've spent vast majority of that game just fucking around in the open world. Like, the missions didn't feel very long to me.
No, I was pretty mission-heavy on it. At least I didn't save game time or anything in a lot of...
Like, are you counting... When you say campaign, do you count, like, the Strangers and Freaks stuff? Did you do, like, most of that?
I did not do most of that. Okay. In the early hours, probably when we talked about the first time, I had done a lot of that. But no, and most gameplay time clocks I've seen are between... 25 and 40 hours for people who just did campaign. I think Rockstar said it's not, you know, a 10-hour campaign. It's 20, 30, 40.
If you did the missions, like if all you did was straight up, I did this mission, now I'm switching to Michael, I'm going to do his mission, and I'm going to switch to Trevor and do his mission, like I would say you could probably finish that game in 12 to 15 hours that way. Well, like, it's definitely not 20 to 30 hours.
Well, then let's take numbers out of the equation. I think it's too long for the story they're telling. That's my basic point, is that There's a reason Die Hard isn't... Okay, Die Hard does have a trilogy. It's got three movies.
Yes.
But there's a reason it's...
Like five. It's got five movies, dude. Right.
But there's a reason...
What do you mean that Die Hard's a trilogy? No, it ain't.
There's a reason that's not an ongoing story over 6 hours, because it just does... You can't sustain that. And to me, Grand Theft Auto V, and we'll get into these issues, it throws a lot of balls in the air out at the beginning that interested me vastly, especially to do with Trevor and some of his stuff. And over the course of the game, it just gets diluted and diluted and diluted, as I felt like a lot of that went nowhere, as it didn't shift into a higher gear. And I feel like I don't need it to if it's a nice, short, to-the-point game, like an action game. Like, if Halo were 30 hours long, Halo would be fucking terrible. It would be unbearable. But, because that's not the story they're telling in a Halo game. But Halo is the length it needs to be, and it's perfect in that length. It knows its length. To me, and that's a comparison I would say. But like with GTA 5, it was the longer it got and the more it just kind of stayed in that vein and didn't go any further, and in some cases I actually feel regressed, because I thought some of the opening stuff went deeper in with the characters than the latter stuff did. It just got to a point where I just wasn't invested, and because I really do play games at this point for a story, even though some of the missions were really fun, and well, you know, that last heist mission, there's parts of that that are just a blast. There's some cool stuff they do there, I will admit that. But I don't care anymore at that point, because they had drawn things out so far past the point of me being invested. And that really was my overall opinion. And I, you know, we'll get into those issues later, but that's what
let's tell you some out.
I want to talk about Trevor. Yes.
Okay, Trevor.
I went on record, first podcast, I think Trevor is really intriguing. To me, it all depends on how they wrap up this character and where he goes. Mm-hmm. And I thought there were some good scenes. I thought it was, like, a really funny and sweet... Like, there were some unexpectedly sweet Trevor moments.
Yeah.
Like, when you do that big heist with him and the boats, and you, when you first take on Meriwether. And it just pissed me off from a game mechanic standpoint, because you do all that and you get no money. That was mean. But Trevor was angry about it in the right way. Like, this was personal to him. He wanted to have a score because he had never had one for himself. And you know, he was really bummed out when that happened. And Michael saw that and was like, I'll help you out, buddy. I promise. And I liked that stuff.
Yeah.
And I liked that when you kidnapped the wife, and he and the wife fell in love.
Yeah.
That was also unexpectedly sweet.
Like, one of my favorite scenes in the whole fucking game is when he, you know, he has to drive back and give her back, basically. Yep. And then, I don't know if this was just total coincidence, I don't think it is, but he was driving away, that's the song.
Take
the
Away
radio.
The Heart, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, it was fucking, it was amazing. Like, it was great. So perfect.
It was perfect, yeah. It was the same song for me. And there's some good stuff like that. And I think Trevor is, overall, the performance is great. They do some interesting stuff with him. But they do this subplot near the end where he goes off the rails and starts killing people. So he kills Floyd and his...
And his girlfriend, yes.
And we never mention that again.
Yeah.
And I successively... I don't know if this was a coincidence. It didn't feel like it could be. But every time I switched to Trevor or loaded in as Trevor, he was surrounded by dead bodies for a while.
Huh. Like, that happened to me once. Like I like switched to him one time, and he was like out in the middle of nowhere, yeah, drunk with like, yeah, there was just like dead people around.
There was that one, and there was at least one or two more past that. So I felt
I
like
didn't see those.
I thought they were building to something with him, and at the same time they're building his relationship with Michael, where I think one of the more I didn't really care at this point in the game because I thought they had drawn it out too long, but. And I wish this confrontation had come earlier. It annoyed me how far they delayed it. But when you know Michael has to fly to the other part, where is he flying? Somewhere in the Midwest.
It's a fake thing,
right?
But it's where you started the game,
right?
Which is where
you go back, and that's an interesting set of scenes.
Yeah.
And the stuff with Trevor there is I don't like the shooting in this game, so I didn't like the mission side of that. But like I thought the story concept stuff there was good. But then again, after that. At the same, you know, so we have this subplot where Trevor is going into a really dark place, and this is somewhat tied into Michael.
I would say Trevor's like in a dark place, and he stays like, I don't think Trevor is the character that does not develop to me almost at all. Like, Trevor is, he's like the Joker, he's like a pure force of nature, and I think that's like the point of him is like, I don't think he's supposed to develop. Like, he's, I wouldn't call him boring. Like,
but no,
I would say,
let me
like,
explain
he doesn't
my
need
point.
To develop to
let me explain
be
my
interesting, because he's so fucking crazy.
Well, but we are doing story stuff with him, and it doesn't get payoff. Like, he and Michael, that just kind of, they're at odds for a while after that, and it just kind of goes away on its own, and we don't really
see
that
progression. That, like, the problem is there's no real payoff for it. Like the conclusion of the game doesn't have any meat to it whatsoever, but I think the journey is fine.
Trevor is too extreme to not have anything come down on him. I don't need him to get his comeuppance. I don't need him. I don't even need, like, you know, a Tony Soprano level, you know, hint of a threat at the end of the game for him. But I needed something. And they didn't do anything with Trevor in the last few hours.
I mean, you
anything.
Could, you could kill Trevor. Like, that's one of the endings, is you could be like, yeah, no, he's a
but it's no. It's no. It's too. Because, one, you only can do it as Franklin. And that's the problem. If it were Michael and Trevor at the end and you could make that choice, Michael kill Trevor or Trevor
no
kill Michael?
Michael would never kill Trevor. Like, that's, I don't think he ever would.
But you could have that choice.
Yeah.
But that would
be really against the character to me.
But I also think it's so obviously against Franklin, especially with the two people who are presenting you that, Devin and the FBI guy.
I mean, you're
guy.
Not supposed to pick either of those choices.
And it's so, and oh my God, that's a horrible scene where Devin comes in and says, you've got three choices. A, you can do this. B, you can do this. C, you can do this. And then your phone comes up and says, what are you going to do? A, B, or C? That is the worst presentation of a multiple choice ending.
Yeah.
It is awful. That presentation. It's like, really, Rockstar? Like, you have this wonderfully polished game and all this stuff, and your presentation of multiple choice ending will be a character will just flat out tell you you've got A, B, and C, and your phone will pop up A, B, and C, and it's no more dynamic than that? Come the fuck on. In 2008, you had a great multiple choice ending that felt it so accumulated on the themes of that game. And you know, I know GTA 5 is not the same level of ambition, and that's okay, but that multiple choice ending doesn't, it like negatively accumulates because it's so obvious A and B are wrong because of the way it's presented to you.
Yeah.
And of the character you have doing that.
Yeah. No.
And so you're not going to do that. That's too, it's too tied in with the Devin and the FIB stuff. So even if you wanted to kill Trevor, if you felt Trevor deserved something, it doesn't work in that on that level. And so you have the normal ending, and then at the end it's just everybody forgives each other, we're all happy, and we're going to drive Devin off the cliff, and yeah, we're done. Oh, okay, that's our ending? Yay.
Yeah. No, the ending's terrible. I know that. Like, I don't have any problem with saying that the ending's terrible to the game. Throw out other... Like, I want to go deeper into this Trevor stuff, because I don't... I actually really like his character, and I like how... I mean, like is a weird word, but like, I like how he's used. I think he's a very interesting character. I think he brings a lot of... Like, to me, the game... like I think I said this in the first podcast that we talked about this, was compared to GTA 4, like, GTA 4 is immense, is profoundly depressing, and that's, like, it's so overbearing in how depressing it is. Like, everything is gloomy, overcast, you encounter all these people like Brucey and Roman that are very, you know, exuberant, but, like, they seem so empty, actually. Like, they seem like they're just, like, there's nothing to these people at all. There's nothing real here. Like, everyone is actually depressed. Everyone's actually alone. And that's, like, ultimately what the American dream is. It's, like, this profound individualism leads you to this intense isolation. And that's what GTA 4 is about, and it's awesome. In GTA 5, and they don't ultimately pay off on this at all, but, like I said, like, on the journey, I still found it enjoyable and interesting. And there was something there, was that there's so much anger. Everyone is so profoundly angry with these, like, Franklin's not really, but because Franklin's just a weird character. But Trevor and Michael just are so angry, and particularly, like, Michael just has scenes where he's just shouting at people.
Okay,
and he just snaps and is yelling, and, like, that, there's, like, there's something, like, there with, like, Trevor represents this pure id, like, this pure anger, just this walking fury on the planet, that he doesn't give a fuck about anything, and he will kill people, he will do anything, because he's a crazy motherfucker. He is pure emotion, and that is kind of like what he represents, and he's just walking around like this goddamn tornado.
And I get that, and I when we talk about Michael, I do like Michael is the best part of this game. Yeah. To me,
I mean, he's like the actual main character.
He is, and I think they handled the themes of anger with him really well, and he also has an arc where that anger is ultimately managed, and it's really interesting, and I like that. With Trevor, I don't necessarily need Trevor to have an arc, but I just needed something more when, you know, because I don't agree with you that he starts dark and stays that dark. When you get to
the first fucking thing he does is he kills Johnny Kleebitz by stomping his fucking face in for no reason other than he saw Michael still alive on the TV and he just snapped and killed Johnny, who's the character from the last Lost and Damned.
It's a great introduction.
That is the darkest, that is the most like violent and affecting thing that game did to me, because that was a character, if you've played GTA 4 Lost and Damned, that's a character, you know, like, I really liked Johnny. And, like, seeing one, that character, be in that really dark place after the end of Lost and Damned, where it doesn't set that up, but you can see how he gets to be this meth head who's in the middle of buttfuck nowhere, and then just see him be brutally murdered for no reason whatsoever, that was the darkest thing that game did to me by far, because...
How do they pay off on it? That's my question.
They don't. It's they're setting him up. Like, that's all set up. So that's why I'm saying they show you what Trevor is.
Setup needs payoff. Setup needs payoff.
But they're just setting up who his character is. Like, there's no...
So they said,
there's no true payoff. I agree with you. But on the way there, like there's tons of stuff that I feel like the ending is terrible. Like, there's no real payoff. They didn't, like, have any thematic... real, like, conclusion to anything, but on the way there, they can set up an interesting character, and I can follow along that character. Like, most TV shows are like this. I'm just like, the endings are almost all terrible for TV shows, because it's like, at some point, it's just like, I just like the journey along the way, and if it doesn't end well, well, that sucks, but then I can kind of move on. That's exactly, like me comparing GTA 5 to Die Hard, I think it was a mistake, because, like you said, Die Hard is the length it needs to be. GTA 5 is, and video games in general, tend to be a lot more like TV shows and how they're paced, because the gameplay mechanics necessitate a much longer game than the story would normally require. And that's why GTA 5 needs to be as long as it effectively is because, like, the gameplay needs to have it be that long, or else all those systems would be completely wasted.
But, okay, here, let me explain a little deeper what I'm trying to say here. With, I think the moment with Johnny Kleebitz is a great introduction to Trevor. It hit me when it happened. But for one, GTA 5, generally, its attitude on violence is action movie violence, where it's not real, it's cartoony, it doesn't matter. But it has moments like Johnny Kleebitz's death,
yeah,
and a lot of other scenes of what Trevor does, where the violence has an impact. And I do think it is worth talking about violence in Grand Theft Auto games.
Yeah,
I don't agree with...
Yeah, no, we have to... This is one of the major discussions around the whole game.
Yeah, and I don't need to go to the length of saying, you know, it should be banned and all that stuff, and I don't believe that at all. I don't believe it causes violence, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
But I think GTA 4 and Red Dead, they are some of the more violent games of this generation. I also think they are some of the more socially and intellectually responsible games in terms of how they talk about violence. Trevor is all shock to me. He's all shock. Yeah. Johnny Kleebitz, because you have a moment like that to introduce him. And that's fine. You need your introduction. You do it by sacrificing a character from an old game. It hits everyone who played it.
It's very comic booky of like, here's this B-list character we're never going to use again. Let's just fucking kill him.
Right, and it works in that moment. But then I feel like you have successive moments where Trevor goes to similarly extreme places and never with any accumulation to me. And I think the closest they come is when he kills... Is it Floyd or is it...
Floyd, like, Wade is the dude who lives, that then, like, from that point on, he's just in the strip club, which I thought really funny.
Wade, yeah, well, it's Wade and his girlfriend.
No, Floyd and his girlfriend are the ones who die.
Well, and it's the way that scene plays out is conspicuously darker than most scenes in GTA 5.
Yeah.
Where he has had a bad day, he's mad about Michael. Trevor is in... It's similar to the scene with Johnny Kleebitz.
Yeah.
Where something has happened that sets him off. He takes it out on these two people. It is not played as funny, cartoony violence.
No, it's not at all.
That is serial killer shit they're doing there.
Yes.
And then he goes and kills another guy to do the strip club thing, and then it's a joke. And from that point on, we never say anything about it again. We never do anything with it. It's just a shock moment in the middle of the game that nothing else comes out of. And I think that's an irresponsible use of violence. And I think ultimately the Johnny Kleebitz thing is too, because none of it goes fuck anywhere.
I mean, this is sort of just goes down to a lot of my personal beliefs on all this anyways, but I don't think there's such a thing as an irresponsible use of something in a piece of art. Like, there's can be an undeveloped use of something.
Okay, an undeveloped.
But I don't think, irresponsible is a weird... Like, I wouldn't ever use that word to describe that. And I do agree that it's a really weird moment, but I guess... And it is, and most of that stuff is used for shock value, you know. Like, the torture scene, we can talk about that, because that's like... Those are the three big moments, right? There's when he kills Johnny, there's a torture scene, and then when he kills Floyd and his girlfriend. Those are, like, the three big violent stuff he does.
Well,
like,
and he does vulgar things. We have implications of rape.
Yeah.
You know, which is heavy stuff, and they also laugh off.
I mean, they don't... I mean, because what? Are you saying about the scene where, like, if you switch to him and then he's in the bed with Floyd?
Yeah.
Like that? I mean, that they don't laugh that off because it just sort of, like, happens. Like, the game doesn't say anything about that.
Okay. Well, then that's a problem to me, but
I wouldn't necessarily... I don't know, because it doesn't feel out of character for, like, Trevor's... Like I said, he's pure id. He's pure emotion. He'll just do anything. Like, so I don't.
But what larger purpose are they using him for in the game?
They don't. The game doesn't have a larger purpose. I don't think it. I think it should. I think it would be better if it did. But I don't think that makes it terrible.
And I'm not saying it's terrible.
You can still enjoy it. But like, the way you talk about it makes it sound like you
think it's terrible. Like this campaign. I really don't.
So that's why
I don't necessarily think it's bad. But I think I'm probably partially reacting because no one's talking about this in GTA 5. They've just given it a free pass.
I mean, the reviews were very glowing, but now people are talking about it a lot if you go to the right places. But yeah, like, because, and particularly the discussions about the violence and people thinking there's sexism in the game, I don't personally think it's particularly sexist.
Can I talk about the sexism in the game?
Sure.
We're going to get back to the torture scene in a minute.
Yeah.
This is something that I've thought about GTA 5, and I've thought long and hard about my answer on this. I do think GTA 5 is misogynistic. I don't think there's any way around that, because I think the general stance on women in Rockstar's games, at least this generation's open world, let's limit it to that. GTA 4, Red Dead, and GTA 5.
Yeah.
I think, obviously, it's a male-dominated company. They write about masculine stories, and that's fine.
Yeah, like, the games have, and all the characters, at the very least, are profoundly misogynistic, or Trevor and Michael are.
But this is what I'm saying about GTA 4 and Red Dead, and I want to kind of trace it here, because I think it's worthwhile to... When we talk about misogyny, I want to look at this in a broader context.
Sure.
So GTA 4, I don't think, does great by its female characters. I don't think any Rockstar game has. They do not do well writing for women. But it makes a comment on women in America. And I think it makes a fairly potent one.
Yeah.
For one, the lack of seeing women in the game generally is a comment that in criminal subcultures, and GTA 4's comment that criminal subcultures are really just cultures, that's our country, that women get left out. And then we actually see two examples of this, where we have Michelle, who's a woman who cannot navigate this world by...
Karen.
So she gets to be on the same level as the men. So, like, let me back this up. The default characterization for all people of both genders in Rockstar games is dolts and idiots.
Yes.
And caricatures. And for women, that means and for men, they do that, like, you know, Brucey, like, super, you know, juiced up, that kind of thing. Really kind of dumb. For women, they do it as kind of, like, dumb blonde, big tits, oversexed, all of that stuff.
Yeah.
They do typical kind of slut-shaming kind of thing with their women characters. And that's because, again, on both sides of the gender line, they go to that level on a satirical plane.
Yeah.
Red Dead does not do this.
Yeah, Red Dead's different. Very different.
But GTA games do this. But But here's the thing. The difference between the female and the male characters is that while both male and female characters, side characters, can have that default dumbass characterization, we see a lot more examples of capable men. Mm-hmm. And we see, and maybe they're bad capable men, but they're capable and they're not idiots. And we very rarely see that with women. But how GTA 4, I think, circumvented this, at least to a degree, is we have Michelle, who's introduced to someone, Karen, who does... She can navigate these criminal subcultures and the government subcultures by being strong. She is also capable. Mm-hmm. We have an example of a woman who is not just the typical female default rock star characterization.
Yeah.
Then we have Kate, I believe is her name.
Yeah.
Yeah. And Kate is key to understanding GTA 4 because she is the example of a woman who is she's a very good person. She's one of the only real.
She's the only good person in that whole game.
Yeah. And she is not allowed to exist because of that. She is literally invisible within her family. She is invisible to Nico at a certain point because he can't appreciate her enough.
Yeah.
He has trouble valuing her enough. And in the end, in the ending that I think, either way you choose to end that game, I think it's very telling that you lose Kate. Yeah. She either dies or she leaves you.
Yeah.
And that it's and in the ending where she dies, which I think is probably the one I overall prefer.
Yeah, that's the one I think
I think that's the statement about she has to be erased because that's what this world does to women.
Yeah.
They are talking about women in a way that again, I don't think Kate or Michelle are great characters. They are not three-dimensional or well-written on the same level as Nico Bellic or Roman or some of those other characters, but they are there for a thematic purpose and for that reason I would never call GTA 4 misogynistic. Because while they do have females who are presented in sexist ways, they also have the men who are presented in sexist ways, and then they have capable men and women.
Yeah.
It's geared towards men, but that's also a comment on our lives.
Yeah.
Now, Red Dead does something similar, where women are sort of, there's not many of them in the game, because again, it's this is the Old West. This is just factually, this is a male-dominated society. Yeah. We know that from history. However, I think they actually have some borderline good female characters in that game.
Yeah.
I think Bonnie's an interesting character.
Yeah, I like Bonnie, and I like John's wife.
John's wife. And these are all examples of women who have had to learn how to live in patriarchal societies.
Yeah.
And they're hardened by it. And they're hardened in different ways than the male characters. And that's interesting. They play with gender in interesting ways in that game.
Mm-hmm.
And so I think that's interesting. My problem with GTA 5 is that we come back to the default female characterizations are the same as ever.
Yeah.
And there are no other shadings to it. There are just the default female characterizations. We don't have a Michelle or a Kate or a Bonnie or John's wife. We just have dumb bimbos. We have no capable women. We have no others. Even if we have a semi-capable woman like the woman who works for Devin,
mm-hmm.
The lawyer, she ultimately has to be a floozy and an idiot and get herself killed and shown as incapable in this world and made fun of for being a woman in this world who is uptight. And that's my problem with it, and I think it's probably they're trying to think, oh, okay, our default is we don't show women, it's this commentary on how women are treated in this world, blah, blah, blah. But they've already done that in other games, it's underdeveloped here, they have, you know, maybe four or five significant female characters at all in the whole game, and all of them are sexist caricatures. And I think for that reason, this is a misogynistic game on that level in its treatment of women. I don't know if that is a horribly bad thing in this context, because this is a game about masculinity made by a male development team primarily, made primarily for a male audience. Mm-hmm. I understand that. I do think, though, when people try to say, you know, there have been a lot of... When reviews and reviewers talked about the same issue I just talked about, and you look at the comments and people who will not even engage in this conversation, and the typical GTA 5 fan who is just a raging fucking sexist... And if you go on GTA Online...
Let's calm down with the comment. Like, comments are... It's a weird thing on the internet. Like, because a minuscule fraction of the number of people who actually read a review or engage with it post a comment.
And
like,
I overstepped.
Yeah, like I think people look at the sort of the incredibly despicable behavior and views that are held by a lot of the people who comment, particularly, you know, because it's the woman, Carolyn Petit, who wrote the GameSpot review in particular, said that the game was profoundly misogynistic.
And I agree.
She gave the game a 9 out of 10, and everybody, like, really just horribly disgusting things in the comments. But again, it is a tiny fraction of the people who actually read the review commented. So you can't necessarily say, oh, like, every, like, that's like a sample size of, like, all the people, really, because it's like... If you have those kinds of opinions, in my experience, those kinds of people who hold those kinds of opinions are more likely to be very incredibly vocal and uncomfortably vocal about those opinions.
That's true, and it's something that makes me uncomfortable when we talk about games like this, because while we've talked about this before on the podcast. I think people overstate the problem about women in gaming because the problem is women in all forms of media. We do not have good representations or fair representations in movies, books, TV shows, or games, or even music, because we typecast women in music. See Miley Cyrus, for examples. But in any case, I think there is a general lack of willingness to engage in those discussions. And GTA 5, I do think, is a prime candidate for engaging in that discussion.
Yeah, because honestly, I don't think it's misogynistic. Like, and I don't think it doesn't... I mean, one, I don't think the game has any redeeming characters. I don't think... Maybe you can make a case for Franklin, and even then, I don't really...
But there are capable characters, and there are no capable women.
But I would say, honestly, when I look at, like, Michael's wife... I don't see it. Like, she starts out as a sexist caricature, but as it goes on, I don't see her that way. Particularly once you get to the end of the game and, like, you get, like, the family counseling scene, and you see she holds as much, if not more, power, really, than Michael. You know, she can't kill people the way Michael can.
And
that's not important.
I liked that scene up to the family counseling moment, but then I thought it was she's shrill and dumb again.
I don't think she's the only one who's smart. She's the one bringing up good points. Michael is the horrible sociopath in that family. He's the one who causes all the problems. All the male characters are the worst characters in the game because they're the ones doing the worst stuff by far. The female characters are the only ones that show any degree of compassion whatsoever and the only ones who stand up for any sort of moral value at all. Like, everybody in that game, particularly, you know, the women are very oversexed and use, you know, like, because Michael's wife sleeps around with everybody, but she doesn't enjoy it, she doesn't want to, you know, and there's, like, and based on how you play the game, like, the psychiatrist just straight up, like, tells you that Michael has a sex addiction problem basically a sex addiction problem, that he sleeps with prostitutes, and then, like, depending on whether or not you want to engage in that behavior in the game... He will, like, if you go to the psychiatrist, he will tell you different stuff about whether or not you are fixing that problem. But it's like, you see that everybody is dysfunctional. Like, I don't see GTA 5 more than any of the other Rockstar products, and particularly all the Grand Theft Auto games have the thread in them, but GTA 5 more than any of them is profoundly misanthropic. I don't think it's misogynistic. I think it hates people. I think it hates society. It hates everything. And it's so angry. And that's what I was saying before, is that it is just angry. It is so angry at everything, whereas GTA 4 feels incredibly apathetic. It feels GTA 4, the attitude is, I have been defeated by the world around me. And GTA 5 is, I hate everything about the world around me. I hate everybody. Everybody hates everybody. Everybody is hated. There is no love. There is no compassion in the world of GTA 5.
And I understand everything you're saying, and I agree with it. But it's just the shadings that exist in the male characters don't exist in the female characters.
But it's a tricky thing because it's also... I mean, it is a story driven by incredibly masculine themes because it's a crime story. And then also the three main characters are all guys. And so inevitably, that's going to be what happens. Because the only characters that have any shades to them at all are the three main characters. All the other characters are complete characters and stereotypes, like you said. Other than, I would argue, Michael's wife. And even, like, Michael's family in general, I feel, are... actually the most well-developed characters. His son, his daughter, and his wife are the only ones that feel like they start out as being stereotypes and then you see them as being actual people. You know, Tracy, his daughter, starts off as just being, oh, she's just this girl who wants to be on American Idol and she's just, you know, oh, she sleeps around with everybody and all that stuff. And it's like this walking stereotype, and then eventually, you know, like, you find it, oh, she became like a webcam girl and stuff, if, like, you call her phone. I actually thought that was kind of a funny, weird little detail.
But her last scene in the game is she's about to give a blowjob to someone to get a job.
I mean, that's not her last scene, because she, like, goes on, like...
With you. It's the last mission she is in.
But like, I would say, like, it feels like there are a lot of small moments where she is the first one to email Michael and to try to reach out to him, and you see a compassion there. You see her... that she does have this affection and love for her father, that she wants her family to be together, that there is that there, that I think there should be more of it, but I think it is there, and I think it's not fair to just say that she is just a stereotype or that the wife is just a stereotype, because I think there are more shades there. They're very slight, but they feel like the only characters that are people to me in that entire story, because they feel like, yes, it's like you sleep around with everybody. Yes, you use your sexuality in that way. But fuck it. People do. And especially in LA, people do. But they are people. You know, like, webcam girls are fucking people. And they're not bad people. They're not terrible people. They're just fucking people. They're people who would love their father. And that's... And that... Most things wouldn't show those characters at all. And wouldn't ever even try to, like, show a webcam girl having any sort of, like, anything. Like, they wouldn't even bother to engage with that aspect of society. And I thought that was interesting. I thought that... I really don't think this game is misogynistic. I really think it's much more misanthropic. I don't see any of the characters being painted in a particularly good light. And the only ones I think that is really Michael's wife is the only one that is like, you're the only kind of sensible person.
It's too minor for me. And I see everything you're saying and I see where you're coming from. But this gets into something when we talk about Michael more. I thought the best narrative stuff in the entire game was the stuff relating to his family.
Yeah,
I completely agree with everything you just said. The stuff where Tracy is the first one to talk to you, that's interesting. I like that. I like the stuff with Michael's wife near the end. But I also got to sort of the last big Michael mission. I guess there's then the one with the limo and you have to go save his family in the house.
Yeah.
But those two missions, those are probably my two favorite bits of story in the entire game. I think that is that maybe hour of gameplay is spectacular. Well, not the gameplay side of it necessarily, but the story side of it. Really, really good. And I really like how he's kind of getting his family back together. For one, Michael is trying to work through his own anger issues at that point.
Yeah.
We get deeper in on that. We get deeper in on his son and his daughter and his wife. But it's also, I just felt the whole time, this is really good. This is well written. I like this. It's almost heartwarming to a degree. You know, when you go save his family in the house, there's something really satisfying about that moment as an action beat.
Yeah.
Because it is Michael kind of reaffirming his love for these people.
Yeah.
And them reaffirming it to him in return. But it's also too little too late for me at that point because they are putting in a lot of residual character development that could have been placed in other parts of the game. Because you go back to some of those early scenes, I feel like, with Michael's wife and stuff, and it's not there. They spend so much time on the stereotypical aspects of these characters, including, like I said, the introduction to the daughter in that last stretch is more of the same. And I don't know, I feel like they pack too much of that into such a small amount of game. It's really good. It's not enough for me, and it's not enough to dissolve my view of how this game treats women.
Like, I just don't think if you... Like, I think if you look at it as a whole, like, they start out as stereotypes. Like, because, like, the son has this, too, of he just seems like this, like, stoner gaming douchebag. And then, like, eventually you see, like, there's more...
But the son has a gradual development because you have multiple missions with him.
And I mean, kind of. Like, you have a couple of missions with him at the beginning, but then the family is gone for, like, the whole middle section of the game, and then they come back. Like, there's no real...
But by that time,
really. It's like, when they come back... You see the layer because Michael sees the layers. Like, because Michael, when Michael wants to try to really engage with his family, when Michael wants to get back with his family, that's when you see they aren't just stereotypes like the game had painted them before. Like, one aspect of the game I like. I think it does actually really well is the characterization of them because I think it's subtle in a way that the rest of the game is not.
I guess, but even then I feel like by the time you go into exile, I think the son has already been humanized to a degree. The daughter and wife will not be until their last, you know, seconds in the friggin' game to me.
I mean, but like the son is like just the big, because like the son, what, he like gives you the drugs and then you like pass out. Like that doesn't, I don't know, like I never felt like he had much of a character beyond being the stoner gaming douchebag until the end of the game when he comes back.
Well, but I thought, I mean, you have the whole mission with, you have multiple missions with him, with the yacht, and you have the one on the beach where you go ride bikes, which is just a nice scene where you talk about it, and you have actually this really in-depth conversation with him about, I want to love you, Dad, and you do all these things, and Michael is having to hear these harsh truths, and at this point he can't subsume that, and then you get into stuff with his daughter there, and I feel it makes a shift there, but I do think... I liked the son character to a degree very early on, actually, that I was surprised by. Because his introduction into the game, I was like, this is funny, I don't know if there's a character there. I thought they found a character to him very fast that they did not find... I don't think they ever found with Tracy and Amanda, but I think they started to find with him near the end, and I don't think was ever fully fleshed out.
I don't know, I definitely think they found a character with Amanda. Like, I can see... Like, I liked Tracy, like, I think they did good stuff with Tracy... Like, but again, like, so much of, like, the Tracy thing is so tied into that one email she sends that, like, completely changed the way I looked at that character. That's one of the reasons why I like it so much, that there's, like, something so small just, like, revealed something else in it, I guess.
So if I wanted to be extreme here, I could say we relegate female characterization in this game to emails.
I mean, sure, like, and, oh, I'm, yes, the, like, at a certain point... It's as okay, misogynistic is not the right word because misogynistic is too aggressive, but it's sexist because everything's sexist. It is completely unavoidable. It is a game written from a male perspective about masculine issues that deals predominantly with how violent men feel when they age and what and father-son relationships reflected both with Michael and Franklin and Michael and his son. Those are the predominant themes of the game. Yes, women are not featured prominently. They don't need to be. That's just because you can't do that. That it would be honestly worse for it because it would be less focused than it already is because it's already very unfocused on the themes it does deal with. So, like, I think it's like it's yeah, like it doesn't necessarily it's not a feminist work of art, but it's I would definitely not say it's misogynistic.
Okay,
misogyny. I mean, like misogyny literally means you hate women. Like that is just what that word means. I don't.
This is my point. It hates people. It hates people, but it shades other characters and it develops other characters and it allows us to understand.
Your problem with the game is that it doesn't develop people, though.
Okay, but no, but it does go into detail. I already admitted I think they develop Michael well. Mm-hmm. I think they do stuff with Trevor. I don't think it pays off. I don't think they ultimately develop him, but they go into issues with him. They have stories with all of these guys. We understand why they're angry. We understand to a certain, you know, we understand to a certain degree early on, at least, why Franklin is trying to do what he's doing.
But those are all the main characters.
Okay, but... Okay.
Like, point out a side character that has those shades. That's what I'm saying. That, like, it's
I think even someone, male main characters. I think even someone like Lester has more shading to
maybe
him.
Maybe Lester. I'll
and
give
I think
Lester.
we can see where he's I'll coming from. I think someone like Lamar.
Lamar less so. Like Lamar is really funny, but he doesn't have...
I'm not
like,
saying the development is good, and I'm not saying it is ultimately pays off, but I'm saying... when we talk about why, this is what I was trying to say, you cut me off, but when we talk about, you know, it hates everyone, it goes into why we're supposed to hate Michael and Trevor and Franklin and some of these other people. It just, and I think it allows us a level of empathy with them. And I think in its best moments, I do have, empathy is different than sympathy. Empathy just means understanding. And I have understanding for some of these characters at certain parts of the games. I don't ever have that with a female character, so all I'm left with is the bitter sexist hatred that's there, and not any depth to that. No empathy, no deeper exploration of why the female characters are... We know why there's an exploration of why the male characters are angry and violent. We have things like middle age and stuff. We don't necessarily have an explanation of why the female characters are sluts and oversexed, beyond that Tracy is a teenage girl, and apparently that's what teenage girls do. And it's too simplistic to me.
But I would say I have more... I would say I have more empathy and sympathy for Amanda than I do... for any of the main characters. Like, I definitely have empathy with Michael, but Michael is the worst person in the game. Like, at least Trevor's horrible, but he's honest with himself. Like, he knows he's horrible. He acts on that horribleness. Like, Trevor's kind of a lost cause. He's like I said, he's like the Joker. Michael is by far the worst person in the whole game in sort of, like, a moral outlook, I guess. And that's why the game comes off as misanthropic to me, is because he's the main character, and the main character is the worst person in the whole fucking thing.
Well, and then is it a problem to you that they kind of try to push Michael down a redemptive path in the end of the
game? Yes, like, that's why I'm saying I don't like the ending, is because, like, the ending doesn't even pay off on the misanthropy. And that's, like, kind of the worst part about it, is that, like, GTA 5, I only realized how, like, depressing that whole game was when I got to the end and saw the ending and realized...
You mean GTA 4,
right. Yeah. And, like, realized this is how everything had to come to. This is really what the game is about, and made me think about that whole game in a different light. GTA 5 doesn't do that. Like, GTA 5 doesn't make a point about misanthropy, and the point, like, the ending note it ends on is disingenuous with the concept of misanthropy itself, because it's a happy ending. That game should not have a happy fucking ending. That game should have an angry, explosive ending that just, like, ends on nothing, because that's what misanthropy gets you, I guess. Because it's like...
And I think that's what I was talking about before with Trevor, too, is that Trevor having literally nothing happen to him, it doesn't feel true to where that character is going. Like, Trevor's life is going to end in a fucking blaze of fire.
Yeah.
We just know that. And Michael's is going to
end. Mine did. I bought a fucking jerry can, I poured gasoline on the ground, shot it, and lit myself on fire, and then I quit.
Nice. No, but, and you know, Michael's is, he's going to die fucking alone and sad.
Yeah.
And Franklin
he should. Like, the fact that he gets, like, that the family stuff works out, I don't like that. I think, ultimately it should be revealed that Michael has not learned anything because an old dog can't learn new tricks.
And so that's part of my other mixed reaction to those final scenes of this family, is that I think they play pace-wise, there's a good action beat there, you know, it feels satisfying to a certain degree, but also it's all false to me, because no way Michael reaches that point. Yeah. No fucking way. And maybe you want to go in more in-depth on your characterization of Michael and these ideas?
I mean, I think we've more or less covered that. Of just
Because let me sum it up. I think see in Michael is that Michael is someone who really does think he's better than people. He thinks he's superior. He thinks he's
a compulsive liar. He's a sociopath. He murders and he doesn't give a fuck about it.
Right. I mean, it becomes there's actually something. You know, I talked about my very on the first time we talked about this game. I was interested in the relationship between this narrative, between sort of the gameplay and ludonarrative dissonance in GTA 5. Yeah. And actually, they use that to its advantage in the Michael stuff because you kill, you know, thousands of people as Michael. And that it does not affect him is a comment. Yeah. And they use that well. And I don't necessarily think that's true of some of the other characters in the game.
I mean, there's even one of my favorite lines in the game, and this is only if you decide to go to the psychiatrist at one point. But at one point, like, I went to the psychiatrist, and Michael just tells him, "Fuck it, I think I killed someone on my way here, and I don't even care." It was my favorite line in the whole game, because I killed, like, 10 people on the way there just by driving down the goddamn sidewalk, and I didn't give a fuck.
I did not know you could go see your therapist. I never did that. I called him once or twice, and he didn't answer, so I just gave up.
Yeah, because there's, like, I mean, there's not a whole lot. There's, like, 5. I think, like, you can visit him twice, and then I think you get, like, 2 calls, and then you have the family counseling session at the end.
Okay.
Like, I think they're not, like, the most important parts of the story.
But I like that line you mentioned.
Yeah, it's a great little line. Yeah.
Well, I like the themes of anger with Michael and stuff. And you know, no, overall, he's a horrible person because he... Especially because of how he uses people.
He's so fucking manipulative.
In the relationship between him and Trevor, you never feel bad for Michael.
You feel so bad for Trevor, which is so... Because he's... Trevor is like morally actually the worst person because he does the worst stuff, really. You know, he tortures, he kills people, he fucking kills Johnny, the motherfucker.
Yeah.
But like I said, he's honest about it. Like, and Trevor is the only one who's like, Trevor is the only character who has any sweet moments. Like we said, where he has like the woman who's the wife to like the Mexican drug. Yeah, Patricia. It's like, but you feel so bad for Trevor because it's like you see. That he does legitimately, like, at least care about Michael in terms of, like, the friendship and, like, this very sort of brotherly oath thing they had going on. And Michael doesn't care at all. Michael was just completely using Trevor and using that oath and that, like, understanding of friendship that they had.
Well, and here's another thing I don't buy, then, is that part of what disappointed me so utterly about when the secrets come out...
Yeah.
Trevor letting Michael live does not sit with me at all.
I don't think Trevor would kill him. Like, even though Trevor feels so used, like, Trevor... Like, the one thing that Trevor really has is he has that sense of camaraderie from their old days. And, like, because the whole thing of, like, how he sends emails to Brad, even though Brad's dead. But, like, he thinks he's sending emails to Brad, like, throughout the whole game. I don't think he would ever kill Michael.
But Trevor's also compulsive and out of control with his own violence.
Yeah, like, and he gets to the point almost of killing Michael, like, several times throughout the game. But, I think it's consistent that he doesn't. I don't think he ever would. Well, like, maybe. I think that would be... That's, like, the one thing, for whatever reason, he can't do. Like, it's just, like, he has that... Because that was, like, the one thing he's done in his whole life is, like, this crime stuff. And, like, and Michael was the one who showed him that life. Like, because they have that, like, scene where he's talking about their, like, his past... And you hear that it's like he met Michael when he was in the Air Force, and Michael's the one who showed him this life and like kind of almost allowed Trevor to be who Trevor is, as awful as he is. That is who Trevor is, so Trevor can be true to himself, can be this crazy motherfucker because that's who he is. And so like he owes Michael that, and it's like the one thing he understands. It's like the one real human part about him is that in his thing with Patricia.
Yeah. But I can buy that. I mean, that's a good explanation. But what about, and this really bothered me because it's another example of them convoluting the story just to let Michael off the hook. Why does Trevor just forgive him so fast? Maybe not forgive is the right word, but he just lets it slide.
I feel like there should have been a bigger scene there because he just kind of shows up.
It's because maybe Trevor never kills Michael, but would he try to have an ongoing relationship with this man? I really don't think
he doesn't really. Like, he goes back, like... He because he wants to do the last big score, and I don't necessarily think there's a feeling at the end of that game that Trevor and Michael are ever going to really team up that much anymore. Like he is really hurt by it. I don't think he would kill him, but like because at the point of the game, it's like is like at the very end where it's like he goes in and saves Michael and Dave and with the sniper rifle, and then he's just like we're doing this last job. They do the last job, then that like all the shit goes down. And they get back together one last time to kill off every motherfucker left in the game, and then the game's over. I don't necessarily think there's a sense that, like, he wants an ongoing relationship with Michael anymore.
But there's just the antagonism dissipates to me. It's just this sort of cool, icy atmosphere. But what they've been through, I mean, what Michael did to Trevor was horrible.
Yeah.
And Trevor, just to me, knowing who Trevor is and how violent a personality he has, maybe he doesn't go so far as killing Michael. But I also think, I don't know if Trevor values money so much that he's going to work with this guy and just kind of let it slide.
I don't think
just...
he values the money. I think it's the glory. Like, he wants that last big heist. Because they also say multiple times throughout that section of the game that this was, like, their dream when he and Lester and Brad, like, were like, this is the big one. And he wants the big one. And the fact that they can do it now is excites him so much.
Well, but then maybe they could have rewritten some of those sections to be, even if they're working together, he's a little more antagonistic.
I think I do agree. There should have been a bigger scene when him coming back and really confronting Michael a little bit more about it. Like, there should have been a really good fist fight between them.
If they wanted to redeem Michael, Michael could have owned up to it at some point.
Yeah.
They could have had an actual conversation. And I don't think that would fully redeem him, but if they wanted to do something with Michael's character at the end that wasn't completely disingenuous, Trevor could call him on it, and Michael could finally say, you know, if they wanted to have a Michael breakthrough, the only one I could believe is him owning up to Trevor. Because I do think there's something between them.
Although, I honestly think he kind of, in his own way, does own up to it, because he says multiple times that it's like, I did this for my family. Like that's why he got out, is because it's like he knew if he stayed in that life he would die, and he has a family now. He has these other responsibilities. It's like it's kind of like with Trevor has like this weird, like his Trevor's one redeeming aspect is his camaraderie with Michael. Michael's one redeeming thing is that he has this profound sense of responsibility towards his family, even if he's not nice to them, even if he's not a good dad at all, even if he's fucked up their lives. He at least wants them to have their lives. And he wants them to have idea of a good life is, which is living in, like, fucking Hollywood, living in this big goddamn mansion, even though that gets them nothing.
That's
what he's been raised on. And so he got out of it for his family. And I think that is kind of him. Like, I think he does own up to it when they encounter each other. But, like, he owns up to it in that, like, he stands by why he made the decision. He doesn't
apologize for it.
But he doesn't need to. If you truly believe that what you did was the right thing to do, you shouldn't apologize, because you did the right thing with the situation you had at hand. And kind of, I think he did in that case.
Maybe, but I also don't. I never viewed his love, his quote unquote love for his family, as want to better them as genuine at all. I thought it was like Walter White on Breaking Bad, where it may have started with good intentions, but it was completely selfish and self serving.
I agree, but like he has.
I don't think he cares about those people.
He doesn't. Love is not the right word. He has responsibility. He feels he has responsibility because it's like...
But again,
that's like the one thing he has. Like, he has this sense of responsibility, I think, partially from like the culture he's raised in, like coming from the Midwest. Like family values are very big there. And then his obsession with movies is also kind of a part of it, I think. And like, especially that's why I think he moves to Hollywood. Like, and like, adopts this like... disgusting life that he does is because of this fantasy he has.
Another thing I want to talk about with Michael, I really liked that he had this love of movies, but it also comes out of left field. Like, they don't mention it earlier in the game, and I wish they had seeded it
They do like a little bit, because they have because he says the one line that I don't think this line is actually from a movie, but like the whatever line he says to the jewelry store dude, that then like that guy says it on the news, and then that's how Trevor finds it out, is that like he says like, oh, like you quoting these bad lines from old 80s movies.
Yeah, it's just, it was like, something where it was a lot of stuff with Michael in this game where I think he's overall the best character in the game to me. I think he's interesting on the whole. I don't like where they wrap him up and stuff, but I think there's a lot of interesting characterization beats, and yet none of them feel completely realized. There's always something clunky to it, and that movie thing, I found it really charming and interesting once they got into it, but I also, once it started, I was like, where'd that come from? If it was this
especially
intense,
like the Solomon stuff, like felt odd to me. Like, I think like I got what they were kind of trying to do with it, but I feel like it wasn't well handled. Like, I agree that like it needed, like if they wanted to go that deep in it, where he became a fucking film producer and stuff, they needed to set it up a little bit more, because there are multiple lines where he says like one of the first things he says to Franklin is like do we need to do a montage now or something? It's like, what? It's like, oh, I was stuck in my 80s movie fantasy. Like, he has those lines.
But here's the difference, though, is the line that specifically struck me when he starts doing this movie stuff is that he's talking to, I think, Dave, and he says, I'm out of crime. All I want to do with my life, I've realized my dream. I want to make movies. That's a good moment, but it's not like that's the one that's so extreme. It's like, because if you like what we indicate before is that he likes movies. Well, most people like movies. Having that dream of I want to abandon my life of crime to produce in Vinewood the rest of my life, that's just a level of this isn't a bad thing about the game necessarily. It's just wonky.
I mean, but that's like, I think maybe that's kind of how our opinions on the game come down, like, and differ, is that I feel almost the entirety, with the exception of the ending, almost the entirety of the game is that kind of wonky, and I think, like, you take more exception with it at certain places.
Yeah, that's probably true. I want to talk about Franklin.
Okay, sure. There's not a lot to talk about with Franklin.
Franklin ultimately fascinated me.
Yeah.
Because for the first probably 5 hours of the game, or the early stuff, I think he was the best character. I really liked him.
He's definitely the most... like, because his stuff with Lamar is my favorite part of the whole game. Dialogue is fucking amazing.
It's well written to a degree that very little else in this game or Rockstar lore ever is. And Rockstar writes really good stuff, but that Franklin Lamar dialogue is just crackling.
Yeah.
And I think Franklin's interesting at the beginning. He feels more fleshed out. I feel like I know him a little better. And then once Michael and Trevor... you start getting to play as them, Franklin's not a character anymore.
Once he gets his house, he's basically done with, like, what he does in the story.
He's nothing. He's just... it's so weird to me. When I say fascinating, it's like, I realized at a certain point, this guy is not a character. The game stopped caring about him. I like playing as him because I made Franklin look really fucking cool. He had a red suit.
I like Franklin a lot. It's like his was my favorite power just because, like...
Right. It's practical.
Slowing down time and driving around. That was really fun. But yeah, like, he's... Once he gets, like, his score and he gets his nice house, it's just, like, it feels like... At some point, it almost feels like maybe that was kind of weirdly what they were going for, because it's, like, his whole arc... at the beginning is like, I need to get out of the hood, because that's how all that's like basically San Andreas in a nutshell too. It's like, we need to get out of the hood, man. We gotta like aim higher, motherfucker. And when he finally does, like, he, like, the jewelry store heist, he gets a nice house, it's like he's got money that he doesn't know what to do with, and he's just like done, like he's basically done for almost the entire rest of the game because he did it. But then at the very end, they do a little bit of the, but man, you got out of the hood, but now you've forgotten your homies, man. You forgot where you're from, motherfucker.
Which comes out of nowhere, because, yeah.
Yeah, and then he has to go back and, like, save Lamar and stuff. And I really like Lamar, so it's I like that they brought him back, but it definitely does feel like they drop him, particularly, like, once Michael gets exiled, like, the story is so focused on Michael and Trevor, like, from that point until, like, for, like, 10 hours, until, like, they go to fucking Northampton or whatever it's called and have their confrontation, and then it's like, okay, and now Franklin gets to go, like, meet up with Lamar again, and there's, like, a little tiny bit more with him, and then the game's over.
But this is the...
He just vacates the game for the middle, entire second act.
And I'll say, this baffled me more than it angered me.
Because it almost doesn't feel like it's a huge flaw necessarily with the game, because it's just almost like what the game is. Like, it doesn't...
I think it's a flaw, because...
it's a flaw, but it's not like... it feels like it should be, like, I should hate that he doesn't do anything, and I almost... ultimately kind of feel apathetic about it.
Except saying he doesn't do anything is inaccurate, and this is my problem, is that he keeps being an active part of the story. He still has his own missions and stuff. He's still important. You still play as him a fair amount of time, and after he gets his house, I didn't have any understanding of why he did anything he did. He just, because his character goes away, he has... discerning his character motivations is baffling, and he is a different character in every successive mission.
Yeah, for the entire second act of the game, he does come up in, like, the Devin Weston missions that feel like they're there to remind you that Devin Weston is still a character in the game, so that way, when you kill him at the end, it feels somewhat satisfying. But yeah, like, he gets used. He's not a character anymore in the second act. Like, and I didn't necessarily, because I think I also just enjoyed the gameplay more than you did. I didn't take a huge exception at that fact. Like, I didn't... it was just like...
I generally liked the Devin Weston missions, because they involved a lot of driving, and I think driving to me is what GTA 5 does best, far and away, in terms of.
And you do get that one mission where you're like in the car that has the
James Bond car.
Yeah, that's great. That's a pretty awesome mission. And then you like eject the one person.
It's
great. That's pretty awesome.
You want to talk about gameplay a little bit?
Sure. Fuck it.
I'll say my thoughts. I think this is tough. There's some things that confuse me in this game.
Sure.
For one, I think the driving is great. It's so much fun.
Totally agree.
It's so weird, because GTA 4, driving-based missions, we just dread, right?
Yeah, because it's like... and I wouldn't necessarily say dread. Like, once I played it enough and got a handle for the driving, I was like, I think I can handle this. But there was, like, a huge amount of tension of just, like, at any second, this car's just going to flip 1,000 times because of just, like, how... weird
and there's no checkpoints.
Yeah, exactly. I always forget about that. It's like, people bring that up every now and then when they talk about GTA 5. That's like, finally, a Grand Theft Auto game has checkpoints. I'm like, oh shit, that's right. They didn't do checkpoints before. How fucking crazy is that?
Right. You know, GTA 4 was frustrating for that reason. Yeah, but I think my favorite missions in the game have to do with driving. But then as for the shooting mechanics, and we can go in depth on this a little later, I have no major beef with them, but there's no shooting section in the game that gripped me. And I don't...
Yeah, I can
it's more just, or less agree with that. To me, it's like, here's the comparison I guess I would make. Is GTA 4, I expressed last time that even at the time that game came out, I thought the shooting was a little wonky. But I never... Like, at the time, I didn't think it was bad. Maybe I would call it bad now in comparison to everything else. Yeah. But I still think for the time, that was a relatively advanced third-person shooting system. There really wasn't a lot to compare it to.
Yeah, like of like the open world of Prime, right. For sure.
Yeah, it was really kind of innovative on that level. And GTA 5, third-person shooting has come a lot further, and this feels to me like an absolutely middle-of-the-road mediocre. It does what it needs to do, and it probably won't fuck you up. It could, but it doesn't really go above and beyond on that, the shooting to me. It's just kind of there, and I think it does over-rely on those shooting stuff, because I just... For one, I also think this sort of level design, when you do shooting, is very frustrating. Like, I really think they need to evolve that compass, because it does not help you find enemies to me, especially on multiple planes. Like in sniper missions, I just want to fucking break the controller and break the disc and never come back, because the sniper missions are... For one, I think it's got a really bad sniper rifle.
The GTA has always had like a weird... Like the snipers have always felt a little weird. I didn't have a huge problem with it other than the one where you have to shoot the fucking plane, because they make no effort. That fucking mission make no effort to let you know where the plane is. So it's always like... I'm waiting, and I'm sitting there for like 5 minutes, and then it's like at the very end, it's like, oh fuck, there's the plane. I shoot it once, and it's like, oh, it's gone. It's like, where the fuck did it come in from? Where the fuck is the goddamn plane?
Right. And so, and I, overall, I just thought the shooting stuff was, combined with the fact that you die way, 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 way too easily. Talk about that more in a minute. Yeah. I thought a lot of the shooting parts started playing to me like a really bad version of Hotline Miami, where I was dying over and over, and there was this room full of enemies, and I wouldn't even know where I was getting shot from, because the compass really didn't help me, and it's not fun. So that's kind of my view on the shooting.
Yeah, for me, I didn't have that problem with the shooting. Like, I don't, like... I think I said this on the first podcast, where it's like... When I, like, I really, it was annoying to me when I was playing as Franklin, because he didn't have anything to fall back on, but playing as Michael and Trevor with their special abilities, I felt like, okay, like being really fragile wasn't a big issue to me when I was playing as them, because it's like, I can pop slow-mo, just like clear the room and like sort of calm down and take a deep breath. Like, one thing about the shooting that as I played on, like got on further with the game, that did get kind of annoying, that kind of ties into the level design, is more... Like, taking cover in that game feels really clunky the way it should not. Just like, when GTA 4, like, I think GTA 4 has just bad shooting, and when it originally came out, I don't think I loved it. I'm trying, like, I never, like, enjoyed the shooting in GTA 4. And there are moments where
we didn't have as much to compare it to, is the point.
But I think I enjoy the shooting in GTA 5 significantly more. And there's, like, I do... Like, I don't hate it. I don't despise it. And I'm not, like, completely ambivalent about it. Like, I am in a lot of, like, third-person shooter games, like Uncharted. I do, like, basically enjoy it when I'm playing as Michael, where I can slow things down and do stupid stuff. And when you have, like, a bunch of weapons and stuff, and I can just, like, take everyone out with an RPG. Like, I enjoyed that. But it's, like... But especially having played, like, Max Payne 3, they can do so much more. And I realize that, like... The open world nature of it makes that more difficult, because they can't rely on linear level design to sort of like polish everything. But it's like Max Payne 3 is so good at third person shooting that it's like in even Saints Row the Third and Saints Row 2 that I've beaten Saints Row 2 and played significant amounts of Saints Row the Third, they have better shooting than GTA 5, and they should not. Like, GTA 5 it should have better shooting than Saints Row. Like, it just should. Like, it's weird that it doesn't to me. Like,
At $300 million production budget, it should probably have better shooting than every game ever made.
Okay, that's... You know, they can't... Like, that's impossible. Just
they spent a lot of money on this
game. Yeah, but like, but I'm saying, like, like, I would never expect it to have better... For the shooting to be better than something like Gears of War. Than something like Max Payne. Okay. Than something like Halo. Enough. Because that's what those games are. And the Grand Theft Auto has so much to consider that it's like, of course it's not going to be that good, but it should be better. It should be closer to what they managed to achieve in Max Payne 3 than it is.
And here's my other problem.
I don't think it's terrible.
No, it's not terrible. But here's my other problem with the shooting, is that it's less the actual systems of the shooting than how you use it. Like, I think it's probably... Like, I think to myself that I like the shooting in Red Dead a hell of a lot more. But I think what it is that, for one, there's a novelty to using old-timey Western weapons that's just fun, and you can't get that anywhere else.
Yeah.
But also, Red Dead is... The shooting, to me, is built and integrated better, especially because Deadeye... Like, you have these abilities with Michael and Trevor, and I feel like the game... I always forgot I had those because I don't feel like the game was ever built around using those at certain points. I feel like they never really prompted me to use them. There wasn't even... Like, I don't necessarily need tutorial missions, but it felt like if there was at least, like, a mission, like, with Trevor early on where you really... That rampage mode really came into it or something, or Michael's Deadeye kind of slow-motion thing came in. But, like, in Red Dead... Those missions were so built around Deadeye, and it felt like the level design was so clear and well done in the shooting, and I thought the cover system worked just because of how things were placed in the world in Red Dead. It all felt so much better integrated to me, and here it's just, it feels like a lot of scattershot shooting systems that never fully coalesce.
I would kind of disagree that, like, I don't know, like, this is just, is like, comes down to, like, how we played the game differently. This is, like, one of, like, the really hard things about talking about video games is, like, we have fundamentally different experiences. But I found myself... particularly with Michael, using his power constantly. Like, always in the missions, I was always using his power, getting headshots, taking cover, using his power. And I felt like I enjoyed it because that kind of felt like Max Payne 3 or Red Dead. And I would say, I wouldn't necessarily say, like, the shooting Red Dead is better. I would probably say they're about on par for me. But, like, mostly because, like, I think that slowdown mechanic is really vital for their version of third-person shooting. That, like, Max Payne 3 has it, Red Dead has it, Michael has it. That, like, I enjoy that because it allows you to take your time to line things up because they're not Gears of War. It's, the controls are not quite precise enough for you to, under, like, normal circumstances, to do precisely what you want to do. If you slow it down just a little bit, it's like, all of a sudden, it's like, okay, I can plan this out and do what I need to do while I have this slowed down, so...
That's fair enough. Yeah. But here's my biggest confusion with gameplay in GTA 5.
Sure.
And where I came in with missions to me is that I really don't feel like they sat down and had a clear design ethos for how vehicle systems would work. So we have cars, and they're fairly cartoony in this game. They're arcade-like. They have very fun, realistic physics. But that's how you drive and move them.
Yeah, but yeah, it's not... It's not Forza, you know.
No, it's arcade-y.
You're not going to fucking spin out because you pulled the accelerator down too hard or something ridiculous, you know.
But then airplanes are really different. And I actually like flying airplanes.
I really like filleting airplanes as well.
Yeah, I like flying airplanes a lot in this game because I think it's almost, not almost, but it's sort of almost a sim kind of aesthetic to the airplanes where it's very... They try to make it very realistic in a way that they don't make the car driving. It feels
at the very least, there is, like, turbulence and stuff that you run into every day.
Right, well, and taking off and landing and stuff, it's not forgiving. It's not it's not cartoony. It's very... they try to make it a little more realistic. And then
it controls 1,000 times better than San Andreas. Did you ever get far enough in San Andreas for planes?
No.
Yeah, because it's pretty deep in the game. They are... But unbearable in
San Andreas. Here's the thing. Like, with a car in GTA 5, you can jump into a car and you know exactly how to drive it and you don't need practice. It's great.
Yeah.
With planes, like, I had to go do that flight school thing.
Yeah,
and I had a lot of fun doing it. And then I was great with planes and I had fun with them. But there was always this fundamental disconnect to me between those two aesthetic, like those two sort of philosophies between those two vehicle designs. And then helicopters are somewhere in the middle where they're just non-functional. Yeah.
I wouldn't call them non-functional. Like
they're two on either side. Like, there's a cartoony aspect to those helicopters, and there's a sim kind of realistic aspect, and they don't mesh. And I feel like they fly like crap.
Like,
I could never get that.
They feel like flying helicopters in every single video game I've ever played. That is like feels like I can never get these to quite do what I want to do, but it's like I can get it kind of close. And they sort of like weave a little bit more in the air than GTA 4, but other than that, I didn't notice a huge difference.
I've flown in helicopters so much in GTA 4, that's like the number one thing I do when I'm dicking around in that game. There's a big difference.
I flew a lot of right before I played GTA 5, you know, playing with Ballad of Gay Tony, there's a mission pretty early on in Ballad of Gay Tony where you like go to a yacht and like have to like kill all these people in the yacht, and you're on a helicopter and then you have to kill all these people in a while they're on boats. That was the most annoying fucking thing because there's no targeting interface for like the helicopter, so it was just like I was just firing shit off into the fucking void hoping it would hit something because the camera would not focus on what I wanted to hit and I couldn't get the things to target what I wanted to hit. So it's like I felt like the helicopters don't fly great. Like, they never have. I've never played a video game that I felt like the helicopters controlled the way I wanted them to. Because also, you know, it's a fucking helicopter. Like, I shouldn't be able to fly a helicopter. Like the mechanisms of how a helicopter flies are so complex and fucking bizarre. They're blades that spin so fast it creates enough lift that you float a metal chassis up. Like, that's ridiculous. How the fuck do you control that, you know? Like, right.
But anyway, my overall thought... And then parachutes are more on the plane side where they're very... They're sort of realistic. There's a lot of skill involved in landing on parachutes and stuff. Sure. That's interesting. Right. And then also you die super, super, super easily. It's very, very quick death. So it's sort of realistic on that level. So I just thought there was a lot of disconnect between what are we choosing that we're going for more realism on? What are we going more cartoony on? And ultimately what I kept going back to is I was thinking, I thought this about GTA 4 too, where I thought GTA 4's cars were very, you know, they tried to be very realistic.
Yeah.
But their helicopters were more like cars in GTA 5 to me, where you could just get in a helicopter and you knew how to fly it, and it's just cartoony and silly and it's fun. And that didn't mesh, but I felt like if you took the helicopters from 5 and the planes from 5 and put that in 4 with the cars from 4, that would be like that would all mesh as a suite of vehicles that all feels like the same design ethos. In 5, it's kind of this weird mishmash, and then I thought missions didn't utilize that particularly well because there was a lot of stuff that was just way too clunky. There are so many missions in this game where you go fly a helicopter, you have to pick something up, it's unbelievably difficult because those helicopters don't control well. You're doing something really silly and something that's trying to control realistically, and then you have to go drop it on a one like polygon dot, and it's really tough to do that, and it doesn't work well, and you'll go around in circles trying to do it, and Michael or Trevor, whoever is not flying, will be screaming in your ear, why aren't you doing this, blah blah blah, and I'm like, shut the fuck up, you designed this game poorly in this part, I'm not able to do this. And that annoyed me a lot. And then I thought it just like, and then when I kind of dick around in the game and just try to have fun, you die so easily, and it's at odds with the cartoony kinds of things you can do. So I always hit this wall where I'll try to be doing something silly and fun, and I'll die in some weird random way that, like, really I don't expect it's going to happen because of how silly things have gotten. Mm. And it kind of mars the fun of it to me in a lot of ways.
For me, I never had, like this is like, yeah, there's like the 4 or 5 times where they have you pick up something in the helicopter and drop it onto the back of a truck. I never had a huge problem with that. It was always like, oh, I went a little too far on my first pass, and then, like, I kind of, like, just, like, okay, like, let's just go really slowly and back up. Like, I didn't... It was a little bit annoying, but, like... Well, like I said, like, to me, I didn't... I don't feel like there's a huge difference, to me, like, between the way the helicopters control in GTA 5 and GTA 4. I feel like I'm just as capable of flying either or.
Well, the other thing to me is that... You said it took you a pass or two. Anything you have to do with picking up in helicopter stuff is stupid, and I hate having to do that because it's, like... It's 2013, guys. We don't need to be doing these missions.
There are a handful of like GTA missions in this game of
Well, and there's way more of those ones where they just than in GTA 4, I should say, where they just introduce a random mechanic, and you do that, and then you'll never see it again, and it's annoying. There's a ton of those. There's, you know, Michael and yoga. I guess you can do yoga.
I wouldn't count the side activities as that because
but if it's in a mission and you're not doing those side activities, like, who the hell is actually going to go play that dumb yoga mini game?
It just probably gets like your stamina or something up. I think
There's that. There's stuff. There's tattooing the dude in the one mission. There's just a lot of these that could go on through. Primarily with Michael. You have a couple with Trevor and Franklin.
I mean, the big one to me, the only one that I took real exception at was the one, I think we talked about this before, where you're at the dock and you do the dock thing. It's like, why the fuck? Because it would be totally fine if you then use those mechanics in some creative way to do the heist. You don't. It's like, why the fuck do you have me moving crates? For fuck's sake. Like, every goddamn GTA... maybe GTA 4 does not, but, like, GTA San Andreas definitely has fucking forklift missions. Like, why? Why? I don't want to fucking drive a forklift and lift stuff up in a forklift and take it somewhere else and drop it off. That's not fun. Like, yeah. I don't think there's... Like, you know, like, the tattoo one is kind of whatever. Like, it's just like...
There felt like there were a lot of them to me, and I can't even recall them because they were really dull. Yeah. And I kind of, and overall, my thought on gameplay in terms of just mission structure and stuff is that I really do. I don't want to be a hypocrite. I have a cripple crate. We talk about crates, so
you pick up a hypocrite with your hippo forklift.
Yes, I did say my problem with GTA 4 or one of them was the mission structure is too repetitive.
Yes.
GTA 5 tries to alleviate that.
And I think for the large part, they succeed.
No, it does not feel... It does not generally...
Where you, like, switch between perspectives and stuff. I think they're really creative.
They're more dynamic. But I don't know if I prefer it in the end, because what they've replaced the repetition with is a lot of stuff that feels shaky to me, that feels really unpolished. that doesn't feel all that satisfying. And I am trying to be a little relativistic here, where, yeah, if you put GTA 4 today up by the same standards of 2013 that we judged GTA 5, yeah, GTA 5 crushes it in every gameplay area. But, you know, if you judge what GTA 4 was doing in versus other games at the time in 2008 versus what GTA 5 is doing in 2013, my ultimate thoughts on gameplay in GTA 5 is this feels like a decent evolution of a game I played in 2008 and nothing more. And
that's, sure, I mean, I would give it more credit than that. I think a lot of the mission design is really creative and really well done. Like, it does,
I didn't have fun playing it. I didn't have fun playing
it. And I had a lot of fun playing it. Like, there definitely are the occasional missions like trying to shoot the fucking plane or doing the cargo work that are really annoying. But I thought the average quality of the mission was really good. Of just like, you had like just like so many like crazy missions where you're like switching between Trevor flying a helicopter and like going down to Michael and like just like, you know, sea diving to get stuff. And all that sort of like exemplified by the heist where they like take all these little creative elements and have you like set up something. You know, there needs to be way more heists. Like,
I wanted to talk about this because.
But like, but when you're actually like doing the heist, they like, a lot of stuff happens. They have you switching perspectives, doing different roles, and all like this, these different gameplay mechanics are crammed, I thought, really well into one mission that no other game has ever really done. And so I like the mission design. Like, I think Rockstar has classically had the worst mission design of any AAA developer fucking out there. Like, it's always been terrible. It's always been either, here's some, like, you're controlling an RC helicopter, like, in San Andreas, and it doesn't work at all, and you're going to spend 10 hours trying to do one mission because the controls simply do not function. Or it's, drive to this place, kill this person, drive somewhere else. And that's, like, that's GTA 4 in a nutshell. It's, like, that's almost every single mission.
But at the end of the day, most of GTA 5 boils down to that, but with the added thing of you have to scuba dive or
at the end of the day, like, every mission is going to be go to somewhere, commit action that is, like, basically going to shoot something or pick something up and then do something else. Like, when you really boil it down, everything will be that way. But GTA 4's missions literally are just that. GTA 5 has, like, you're doing that stuff, but in different and creative ways.
But then here's the thing, though. Maybe I would like, instead of Rockstar, quality over quantity, instead of introducing 100 different little things you can do in a mission, why not focus on, you know, the shooting and the driving stuff and make them as good as possible and really compelling and, you know, find a strength and make your build your game around that. Because
but
that's
I think
what...
their strength is the diversity. Like, that's what I found in the missions was the strength was, like, by utilizing the three-person mechanic, having you be able to juggle, like, driving and flying and shooting and all that stuff in missions and having them interact in different ways is the game's strength, because the game's never going to be that good at shooting or that good at driving that a driving or a shooting game just would be. An open world game's strength is its diversity, is the number of tasks you can do and the way you can tackle those different tasks.
But
I
found
GTA 5 takes advantage of
okay,
that.
But I found personally, and you know, I understand if this was
yeah,
different
this,
for you, this,
this
is
this
good. But
ultimately goes down to how much like enjoyment you got from the mission. But
personally, I felt none of that diversity. I appreciate the diversity. It's fun when you switch and you're doing something new. But the only activity I felt was consistently fun, enjoyable, or even consistently doable was driving. And other than that, I found everything else tedious to frustrating.
Okay. Well, yeah, like, I just didn't have that experience playing the game.
That's fine. And I'm glad to hear, you know, you had more fun with it, and that's good. It's just, it was frustrating to me. But let's get back to story. Okay. I feel like we've covered this side of it pretty well.
Yeah.
Two more things I think we need to talk about, which is the torture scene.
Okay.
And then final thoughts on the wrap-up and the ending and all that, because we've talked around it. We really haven't gone directly on it. Let's do the torture scene really quick.
Okay. Let's torture some motherfuckers.
This is an interesting case. This is
I'm going to start off by saying I like that the scene's in there because all the discussion around it, at the very least, is so fascinating to me. Like, all the different reactions.
I can go with that. I can buy that, totally. I'm of two minds about the scene.
Okay.
When I played it, when I played the actual mission, I think it's one of the best missions in the game. And I think the actual point it makes about torture within that scene is very smart. I think it is the most substantive moment of violence in that game. Because doing it, I just didn't want to do it. I hated it. I was like, oh God, Rockstar, you fucking attention whores. At the beginning, I was feeling that way. I'm like, I don't want to play this. This makes me feel sick. I also had just gotten back from a movie that was literally about torture. And I was so sickened by that movie, like in a good way. Like that was, movie was saying, be sickened by this. And I was like, oh, this doesn't seem fun. I just don't want to do this. I'm ripping out the guy's tooth. God, this is disgusting.
Yeah, the tooth
I hated
one
it.
Is the worst.
I hated it. And the waterboarding, I was just like, ugh. And at a certain point, I realized, This is what they're trying to make me feel. And then I think the payoff to it, which is that you do this not because you need to. And like, I don't think that Trevor needed to actually say this at the end of the mission.
Yeah, I think it's. I like this. One of the more disappointing things about the mission is that it is one of the few times GTA 5 is ham-fisted in that Rockstar way of like, we're going to make a social commentary and we're just going to tell you the social commentary.
Yeah.
Like
more blatantly than ever.
Yeah, it's like every time in a Rockstar game anyone ever says the phrase American Dream, I want to slap the Hauser brothers in the face, because it's like, you never in a game that is dissecting the American Dream say the phrase American Dream, because you just immediately kick me in the gut and kick me out of the goddamn game.
Right. And so in this game, before that speech though, what I was feeling was what I started to realize is that I could put the controller down. I could stop playing GTA 5. I could be done with this game. I could, you know, I am choosing to torture this man because I am playing a game. A game is theoretically fun.
Yeah.
There's no inherent reason I need to be doing this. There's nothing substantive I'm getting out of torturing this person.
So the satisfying crunch when you pull his teeth out. So great.
Well, but that's the thing, is that you do it because you can, and it's there, and you have the power, and that is the ultimate message. And I actually thought my conception of it was more nuanced than what Trevor presented, which I thought was a little too black and white.
Like, no, people don't torture because they want information. People torture because it's fun. It's like, I mean, kind of, but not really, but maybe, like, there is that aspect of torture of, like, the sadistic satisfaction of it that is also, like, it is a nice sort of, like, commentary back on what you usually do in video games, which is just commit horrible, horrible acts of violence, satisfying an inherent human sadistic tendency. So,
yes.
Yeah.
So, and I thought, you know, overall, before Trevor started telling me the message and what he felt, I thought I started to understand why Trevor did this.
Yeah.
So that's one mind of the game. Like, I thought the mission was impressive on that level. If we take out the commentary at the end, I thought it was a good meta commentary.
Mm-hmm.
But then you get deeper into the game and you realize it is such an outlier. This game is not meta in that way. This game is not a commentary on the actions of game playing. This game is not ultimately interested in violence in that way. It never is really brought up again.
Yeah.
It doesn't feel of a piece with the game. And ultimately it was like, you made a good point, but I think you were being an attention whore. Because...
like, I wouldn't... I think they kind of... because... and it's almost like... because I'm exactly like you. I'm like of two minds of it. But GTA... it's a part of me. I feel like GTA's place in some ways is to be an attention whore when you need an attention whore. Because when GTA 3 came out, it got that reputation and that stigma, even though GTA is in no way the most violent game. Like, if you want to be concerned about, like, video games teaching people about, like how to be violent and, like, it's causing people to be violent, GTA is not the franchise you need to be going to. Because, like, the only thing... because most of the time, when, the, you know, the classic GTA, like, oh, this is the, like, prostitute murder simulator where you get points if you kill prostitutes, or it's like, and it's the classic, like, oh, you have sex with a prostitute, then you kill her to get the money back. Like, that's the thing. GTA has never asked you to do that. GTA has never told you you could do that. The only reason people know they can do that is because sick motherfucking people, like me, have sex with prostitutes in the game, and then realize, what if I just kill the prostitute? And then it's like the money drops, and it's like, there you go. And you get even more money because you had the money from the other gentleman who visited her previously that night. You know, so...
hey, did you ever find prostitutes in GTA 5?
Yeah, there's a lot of them. Like, if you're in the Compton-esque area. There's a lot of them down there. Finding prostitutes in GTA 4 was like, they would never see them.
I saw them all the time.
Oh, huh, that's weird. Like, yeah. I felt like every time I was driving down the street in GTA 5, it's like, it's fucking America, goddammit. The streets are paved with prostitutes, or at least the sidewalks are.
Yes.
But that's like the funny thing about GTA is that like most of the awful shit that happens, and this is more like pre-GTA 4 when the series was really silly, is stuff that people completely elected to do. But GTA got that image of, this is the prostitute murder simulator. Then GTA San Andreas had the hot coffee thing that was like a sex game, mini game that wasn't even going to be part of the game that they coded part of it for. They were like, no, we're not doing this, but left some of the code in. Then people hacked the game. Again, people hacked into the fucking code of the game. It wasn't even going to be a part of the game anymore. People hacked into it, found out about it. Huge fucking controversy. This is just like... it's the nut, like, Rockstar has nothing to do with it. Like you know, like, how many great pieces, works of art would you think were, like, complete trash or, like, morally abhorrent because of stuff, like, the author potentially, like, edited out of it? Like, that's not fair to levy this, like, oh, this is so horrible, it's teaching kids how to have unprotected sex or whatever they think is going to happen, have people know how to have hot coffee because of the hot coffee mod. It's like, and so GTA has that, like, lightning pole like thing to it for whatever reason. And so it's like, they kind of need to be attention whores. They kind of need to just have like a point of the game where it's like, we're just going to do something ridiculous. We're going to do something you would never expect us to do. And GTA 5 with the torture thing, it's like, yeah, like I never, you know, obviously I had heard that there was a torture thing in the game and people had taken exception to it.
Going but I didn't think it would be playable.
Yeah, and I didn't necessarily think it was going to be playable, but like, you know, getting to it, one of the things I love about it that like, I think it's the main problem I have with it, kind of like you, is that they don't follow up on it enough. And you know, you wouldn't like throw around terms irresponsible like the kind of you did, but like a lot of other people have been saying, it's like, this is an irresponsible use of violence in media. I don't think that's literally possible. We're fucking human beings. You want to talk about violence? GTA 5? Fuck you. Like, I'm living in a country where 300 years ago, we literally wiped out dozens of civilizations of entire people that no longer exist. Languages and cultures that no longer exist because not my ancestors, but the ancestors of people who settled this fucking country killed everybody. Fucking everyone. You want to talk about violence? Fuck you, GTA 5. Fuck you, you have no idea what humans are. You have no idea what humans are capable of. And that's kind of the point of the game, and what I love about that scene is, like, everyone is like, I don't want to play this. This is abhorrent. This is disgusting. And I'm sitting there going, you motherfucker, do you live in America? Do you pay taxes? You fucking contributed to precisely this behavior. If you're like me, and you live in America, and you've paid fucking taxes, you've given money to the government. The government that has, we know, committed these actions in the past and is still committing them right now, fucking torture people. That's the whole fucking point, is that it's that abhorrent, and yet you're taking exception at its use in a video game? Shame on you. Shame on you, because that's fucked up. How morally fucked up is that?
Right, right? I agree. Like,
take exception at the fact that we're actually fucking doing this stuff to real people. Don't take exception to the fact that Rockstar put a mission where you do it to a fake motherfucker in a video game. I don't give a... like, whatever, dude. Like, I thought that was, like, I didn't have on, like, the twirling out the tooth part, I thought was really just, like, Other than that, I didn't have a strong reaction to it, because it's like...
Well, here's what I wanted to say. I liked the strong reaction I had to it. I think ultimately, especially with... I think you put it in context so well there, and those were kind of thoughts I had that I hadn't articulated as well, but, like, I'm overall, while I'm of two minds of it, overall, I'm positive on it. It's just that little thing of, it never quite felt like this was the right context for it. You know what I mean? Like, if Rockstar is going to have this, they make a really good point, but it doesn't quite feel like the right game for that point to exist in. Like, if this were in GTA 4, perfect. That would really fit. But
even then, like, there's something about, like, just the starkness of it. Oh, like, and I agree. How much it contrasts with everything is almost, like, kind of just... it all feels like it's part of it to me. Like, to me, the torture thing, I think, is the best part of the whole game. Maybe it wasn't intended to be, I have no idea. But the reaction coming out of it has revealed so much lack of self-awareness and so much hypocrisy around the people who play this game.
Yes.
That it's just, that's what the morally important part about it to me is, that it's like, do you have no idea what you're talking about? Do you, like, have no idea about the world or about any of this stuff? Do you have no conception of violence? Because you're taking exception at its use in something made for your entertainment. And you have been engaging in these fake acts of violence the entire time and gaining pleasure from it. And your lack of cognizance of the human experience is baffling to me. And that's what I love about the torture scene.
And that's what I thought when I got to that torture scene. I think it really is meta in an interesting way there.
Yes, and it
felt a little...
It's the only part of the game that feels like legitimate satire to me. Of just like...
Real
fucking satire. Like, just, you know, satire's not supposed to really be funny. Satire's supposed to make you kind of sad and cringe and kind of angry.
Read Voltaire.
Yeah, exactly. It's supposed to just be like... or it's just like... you know, good satire is so dark. It's like fucking Starship Troopers is my favorite example of satire. Because most people who watch the movie don't even understand that the movie is a satire on American foreign relations, even though the fucking movie ends with Neil Patrick Harris metaphorically, but basically just literally raping the alien bug queen. The alien bug queen basically just has a vagina for her mouth, and he takes a rather phallic psionic device, shoves it in its mouth, and the thing blows up. You cannot get any more blatant about how the satirical representation of American imperialism raping other countries than that.
Yeah.
And it's like, that's exactly what it's supposed to be. It's supposed to be dark. and make you feel just kind of disgusted. That's actual satire, and that's what I feel like that torture scene really is. And it's, and I don't even know if they necessarily wanted it to be that way. I don't, because it's like, again, nothing around it feels like it has anywhere near that level of like self-awareness to give me the confidence that it's like that's what they wanted this thing to be. But that doesn't matter at the end of the day. What matters is that it is that, and that it has like exposed that aspect to society, and it has functioned so perfectly as a piece of satire that people maybe even understand that it is satire but can't like fully understand it because of their emotional like relation to like the act of torture and their thoughts about it. And that's, I really like the torture thing in the game. Like, it's,
yeah,
like's a weird word for it, but fuck it, I like it.
You, maybe value is the right word.
Yes. I think it is the best part of the game in an artistic sense.
I think I could probably go with that, yeah. Like I said, I still think, you know, I don't know if it perfectly fits, and that's my other, yeah, you know, a feeling, yeah, of two minds about this, my other mind. But yeah, no, I think my initial reaction was pretty much what I still feel, and I really like this conversation we just had.
Yeah.
And I'll say something.
Sure.
I still don't like the campaign in GTA 5. You know, this conversation has not swayed my opinion of the, yeah, game in that way. I will never go back and play this campaign again.
I probably won't either. Like, it's,
yeah, I'll still dick around in the game because, yeah, it's fun. But, you know, I will say this. That we can have the conversation we just had, and for the last 90 minutes,
yeah,
that we could get into this amount of depth, they did do something right.
Yeah, I mean, there is substance to the game. Like, let's keep on going back to this. The problem with the game is it doesn't follow up on it to the point it needs to follow up on it, and that's, yeah, its biggest flaw. But it's like, it's not, there is no substance, it's not that there's no substance to it, there's stuff there,
yeah,
they needed to go further with it, but you know, most stuff doesn't even go this far, especially in video games. Most stuff, like, nothing would ever fucking put that torture scene in there and not like that, you know, like,
no, it's, and yeah, all I'm trying to say is that, you know, anything that can prompt a really good discussion where I feel like, man, this is intellectually, yeah, satisfying.
Anything where I can bring up the fact that I live in a country that is founded on genocide makes me happy. Just in like my, and this is my
okay, right.
Let's go into the end of the game now. Yes. Like, because they said multiple times, my ultimate takeaway from the game of what the game wants to be is like misanthropy personified, and that I think is an anger. That opinion of like misanthropy is personified by anger. You have to just be angry at the world, angry at yourself, angry at your situation, angry that everything is fucked up, angry that everyone has promised you that it's not going to be fucked up, and they all lied to you, and you bought it, and you didn't realize it until it's too late. Like, that's, to me, that's what misanthropy is, and I feel very strongly about misanthropy because that is definitely, I'm not sure if I would say I'm misanthropic now, but I have definitely been incredibly misanthropic at points in my life.
Oh, me too.
Where,
yeah,
where like, like I said, with the living in a country founded on genocide, like realizing the extent of the terror and the horror and the vast death and destruction and misery that humanity has waylaid upon itself throughout the entire course of our history. It's like, just when you come to think about that in like a real sense, it is, you have to be misanthropic at some point. It's like, you have to realize, like, fuck all this shit, man. This is all fucked up.
And I really feel like that too. And, you know, especially, I mean, God, this couldn't be more timely. It's hard to get through the day and not just want to give up when we look at what's going on in American government today.
Yeah.
Government shutdown, debt ceiling thing, and it's a bunch of fucking idiots sitting on their own balls and not being able to do a goddamn thing because they're selfish asshole motherfuckers, yeah, and we're all too stupid to kick them the fuck out of office. You know, and it's like, you just get angry about this, yeah, stuff, and you get angry about the state of American life, and I get angry when I think about, the opportunities I have not had and my children one day will not have because, yeah, of socioeconomic conditions and things like this, and then I feel guilty because I know, but the opportunities I do have, there's so many people who will never get to this level, and it's,
yeah, and it's like, and compared to what,
yeah,
life was like 100 years ago, they're gods.
Yeah,
my children will be literal gods.
Yes. And it's just all these, just when you think about, yeah, the horrors of humanity, if you want to limit it to just American government, that's plenty to occupy a lifetime, yeah, of anger. You know, and ultimately, what I would have wanted out of an ending to this game, and what may have redeemed it for me, is if they really took the attitude you were talking about of burn it to the fucking ground.
Yeah.
And I almost thought they got there. This is the thing about the ending that frustrates me so much, is that there is almost cumulative impact, and I think if they improved a couple of things and made that ending even more raw, it could have worked. Like, I like the idea of the ending is, we are going to go kill every enemy we have.
Yeah.
It's like the Godfather kind of ending.
It is.
But even angrier. And like the Godfather is more of a sad, mournful tone.
Yeah.
That Michael does this because he has nothing left. This is who he's become. Mm-hmm. But in this, it's like, they're going to do this because they hate the world. They hate themselves. This is the only path they have left. But I think that there's two factors kind of working against it. One, yeah. that ending doesn't go far enough in how...
Yeah, and it's happy. It's at the end. It's so happy.
But even before we get to that, just the assassinations. Okay. But also, I don't think any of the villain characters in the game are built to a degree where I feel all that much pleasure killing them.
I really hated Steve, the FIB dude.
I hated him.
He was such a dick.
He was such a...
And just... I don't like him and Devin Weston. I both like really hated,
but I also
because
like
they took money from me. It's like when I did those heists, and then it's like at the end of the heist, you got like nothing from it. It's just like I want to kill those motherfuckers.
But here's what I would have. This is my problem though. I agree with that. I really wanted to kill Steve.
Fuck Dick.
But you know what? When you kill him, it's not that satisfying. You just snipe him from a fucking carousel?
I shot him with a rocket launcher.
Okay, nice. But here's the thing.
Yeah, I didn't snipe shit. I blew him the fuck up, asshole.
I honestly thought that the ending, all these assassinations, needed to be, as weird as this might sound, more sadistic. They needed to be more extreme. It needed to be these characters like unhinged and just not just killing because they can wipe out the problem, but killing because this is their baser fucking instinct and they are giving into it, and that's what it needed to end with. With like when I say like burn it to the ground, it needed to be apocalyptic, that kind of fucking violence they were going to put out at the end, and then maybe something being self-inflicted because of it.
Yeah.
And ultimately it's very safe, and then it, as you say at the end, it's happy. It's, we're going to quip, we're going to high five, and we're going to throw this.
I'm getting too old for this shit.
Yep.
It's like, well...
Great, you quoted Lethal Weapon. Yeah. Good for you.
Like every other action thing under the planet, dude, that involves a character that's too old for this shit.
Yes.
Yeah, it's for me, the happy note, like I said before, it's disingenuous. It needed to end one of two ways. It either needed to end, like you said, where it's like it embraces sort of the anarchy that it, like misanthropy would lead to, of just like, let's fucking kill everybody. It's just fuck this. Or... it kind of, in a weird way, needs to almost end on the same note that Grand Theft Auto 4 did, of like this just like complete defeat. Because that's the other side that misanthropy gets you, is this like once your anger is spent and you realize, like, it's almost like these games were made in the wrong fucking order to me. Especially like for like my attitudes about life. Like, I wish the story should have been flipped, because it's like Grand Theft Auto 4 was made when I was really misanthropic. Grand Theft Auto 5 is made when I don't give a fuck anymore. Just who cares? It should be the other way. It's so weird that it's like, because they're written by the same people, you'd expect that to be flipped. You'd expect that you'd go through this process of the anger of it, and then you reach the point of like, well, it's all fucked anyways, man. Like, this is what the American dream is it's nothing. There's nothing left. There's nothing to this. It's all bullshit. It's like, I wish Grand Theft Auto, Grand Theft Auto 5 could have been so much better with the story. Like, like we've been saying, it's hit on so many things and, like, hinted at really fascinating things to do with it, and has very vague, interesting thematic things throughout, but it doesn't follow through on it. Ultimately, like, especially at the ending, it doesn't follow through. At the very last moment,
and what is that
when
bullshit?
It goes to credit, it just doesn't, you don't feel anything. And it's the worst thing for an ending, is for you to feel just nothing. It's
especially
like
for a game of sizable length,
yeah,
I think. And that you spend a lot of time in this world at that point, and you get an ending that is nothing. Like,
yeah, and it's so sad because, you know, video games historically are really bad at endings. Because it's like almost any medium that usually has like really long stories tends to be
bad. We've been
bad
in a period though recently where there's so many good endings.
Yeah, it's like there have been a lot of games that have very good endings in recent history. But historically it's just like that's almost always where games fall apart. That's almost always where it's like, oh, here's the shitty fucking boss fight. Yeah. Where it's like, and now all of a sudden, like, this story that had some nuance to it just becomes about good and evil, and then the hero defeats the antagonist, and then he gets the girl, and the game's over. Like, that's like 99% every fucking video game ending. It's so bad, usually. And it's like, but Grand Theft Auto 5 did not have that. Red Dead Redemption sure as shit did not have that. They both had very creative, different endings that you would not expect, like, normally a video game to have. And then Grand Theft Auto 5 has a video game ending. Not necessarily in the boss fight part, but in the, well, that's the end of the game. Credits are rolling, you know? It's like, you know, I played fucking Bulletstorm, a first-person shooter, like 3 months ago. And when I finished that game, it's like, yeah, that was kind of fun. And it's like, I had the exact same feeling when I finished Grand Theft Auto 5. It's like, I enjoyed that game for the most part. It's like the story kind of, ugh. But credits were rolling, whatever. Whereas, like, you know,
36 minutes of credits.
Yeah. But you can skip
the I did skip them. But that's, I read, yeah.
Okay, tangent. Assassin's Creed. Always comes back to Assassin's Creed. Fucking Assassin's Creed, you can never skip the credits, and there is always something after the credits in every single Assassin's Creed. And it's always one of the most important things in the game is, like, what's at the end of the credits. It's like, and the, and fucking video games are made by, like, 1,000 people nowadays, so you have to sit through literally the Assassin's Creed 3, I timed it, 30 minutes long. I watched an episode of an anime, and then came back, and the credits were not done. And I was like, you gotta be shitting me! I just watched an episode of Attack on Titan, and this is not done yet?! Like, for fuck's sake, do I need to go out and fucking watch a movie? It's like...
I didn't know you could skip them immediately, so I just went and was working on my computer, and then I came back out, and I thought I'd spent some time, but they were still going, and I'm like, well, I have to leave. And then so I tried like, it, and I was like, okay, like,
oh, you can skip it. Yeah, I love that, but... Yeah.
But no, and I... What is that bullshit Michael gives as the final speech of the game about American capitalism that just comes out of nowhere?
I don't remember.
It's like they're trying to do a big sum-up of the theme. It's like... This wasn't really a game about capitalism.
Yeah, not really. I mean, there was... I really like there's, like, one line pretty early on where Michael's talking to Franklin. He has, like, a pretty great line about, like, man, you should just go to college and get a degree, and then you can make money by ripping people off. It's called capitalism. It's like, he just leans back. That's great. That's the only part about capitalism, the whole fucking thing. That, and maybe you could argue the missions where... The, like, minor missions where you work for Lester to, like to manipulate the stock market. That's capitalism. That's, like... That's like the most minor side mission in the whole game. So
right,
yeah, yeah. I don't know.
Weird.
The game just it felt like they didn't know how to end the game in a weird way, even though they really should have known how to end the game because it felt like I don't know. It felt like they had a direction, a strong direction when they set out, and then they just lost it along the way.
That's my problem with the game is that it starts out to me being so like I said on Twitter when I played the first like night when I like went to bed. Like, right as I was going to bed after playing this for the first night.
Yeah.
And I'd played, a substantial amount. And I was like, this is my favorite Rockstar game so far. This really drew me in. And it really had. I thought it was so multifaceted and interesting. And then I kind of played a lot of that out. And then it kept going and going and going. And kind of getting more and more diluted. And when I talk about the ending, at least, it feels to me like the last 3-4 hours is where it's kind of like falling apart and falling apart and falling apart. And then you have that last scene that's like... He did not wind back up.
Yeah.
And so it was sort of a long devolution for me.
For me, like, I felt like it started off really interesting, and then once Trevor was introduced, probably after the second heist is the point at the game where it's like, it was on a track that, like, it was just like, if you're, like, marking sort of, like, the classic, like, introduction, rising action, and, like, conclusion, it was like, hit a horizontal bar with rising action and kept that for almost the entire game after the second heist to me. Like, I was just like, I wouldn't necessarily say it devolved or diluted. It just didn't necessarily go anywhere, really. It just, like, kept on the same path.
And maybe that's
true, And it's like, and I feel that way about a lot of media that I enjoy. It's just like, that's kind of most TV shows. It's a lot of anime. It's that kind of stuff. It's like, I don't need it to have all of that, but I would like it. And it's disappointing. And that's the ultimate thing about GTA 5 is that it's disappointing, at least with the story part, because GTA 4 and especially Red Dead knocked that out of the park so much.
The ending in those games are great.
And the whole story of both of them, I think, is just so great along the way. Like, GTA 4 has its pacing problems, and so does Red Dead. And GTA 5 fixes the pacing problems that those games had, but introduces its own in not having enough interesting stuff to say. It's like the gameplay pacing is better. It doesn't get stale with the characters in the same way. It just gets stale with the plot instead of the characters.
I prefer how GTA 4 and Red Dead do it because...
I do too.
Because there's a story drawing me through. And that's ultimately... That is the thing for me. And I think
this year in
gaming to me has been one that's transformed my view of gaming as a medium and how I engage with it. Especially with... the first game I played this year was fucking Persona 4. I did the Mass Effect trilogy and played Persona 3. And in terms of new games this year, we've got fucking Bioshock Infinite and Last of Us, which are two of the best video game stories ever told.
Yeah.
And they are told so much through gameplay. And it's just, I don't know. It's something where I was kind of, this is what I want to play games for now, is that I want to have fun and I want to be engaged with the gameplay and stuff. But really, I want to see good stories because I've realized how much gaming is a unique storytelling medium where some of the best stories being told today, they couldn't be told in any other medium. And GTA 5 does not... I don't think it's even really interested in that. side of it, and it's too bad to me, especially because I think Red Dead and GTA 4 are good examples of that principle too. Yeah. And you know, when we talk about endings, GTA 4 has a, you know, a very elaborate ending, mm-hmm. like GTA 5 kind of almost tries to do with multiple choice stuff. But I think if you want to, you know, I don't think we're being too hard on the ending here, because think of Red Dead and its ending.
Yeah.
That is utter simplicity. It is, you know, Jack Marston finds the guy who killed his father and they duel. And yet it is the perfect fucking, you know, punctuation note to that story,
yeah.
almost in a Cormac McCarthy or Coen Brothers Western kind of sense, mm-hmm. where, I mean, it is a Western,
yeah.
where it's just, this is kind of what we're left with, is this final act of violence, and it just hits you right. It sums yeah. it all up in this one final punch.
Especially for you, because you killed, like, everybody along the way. Like, you killed his wife and stuff.
I killed, yep, I know.
It was disgusting.
I think I tied her up, actually, and, you know.
And you executed her, yeah.
Yeah, it's pretty good. But, no, I, you know, so it didn't have to be a lot. It had to be more than it was.
Yeah, I mean, yeah, it just has no ambition. It is,
yeah.
It's disappointing. It's disappointing to me, so. That's GTA 5.
Overall, I think, you know, if I were to assign a grade to this, it's really hard to say.
Yeah.
Because there's the sandbox, which I have fun in the sandbox, although I do think the ease of death in this really hampers some of my sandbox enjoyment. I could do the invincibility cheat, but then I feel really cheap.
Yeah, and it only lasts for like five minutes.
Yeah. Some of the cheats are fun, but...
Yeah, they're better cheats than GTA 4.
Yeah.
But there's no turning on low gravity and getting in the tank like in San Andreas and being able to propel yourself through the air by the force you project out with, like, by shooting backwards with the tank cannon.
Yeah.
Which, that was the best part of GTA right. of San Andreas to me.
So I like the sandbox. I like the world a ton. I like the design of the world. I like all the random stuff you can do. I like the Strangers and Freaks missions. I like the random people who will appear on the side of the road. Although I'm really sad I never got to do that one where I helped the guy get ready for his wedding that you told me about.
That was pretty good.
But I don't like the campaign, and I don't know how to balance that in terms of a recommendation or in terms of my final thoughts. I think because I feel like I'm such a story oriented gamer, ultimately GTA 5 is kind of a wash for me. It wouldn't probably be on my year end best list when we get to that, depending on how many more games I play. I've got a lot on the slate. Just I finally decided what I'm pre-ordering for the PS4.
Yeah.
So, anyway, but, like, you know, it's kind of a B to me, because it feels like a B movie kind of thing, where it's not all that high ambition, it's not that well done, but there's so many ways this game excels. I really have trouble praising it all that much in the end, but I wouldn't give it anything lower than a B, because I don't think it's bad overall, yeah. although I think there are bad things about it.
Yeah, for me... Like, fuck your, like, letter grade bullshit. Fuck your, oh, I'm the man. I'm going to, like, reinforce what school taught me about, like, this is how we grade shit, motherfucker.
I've been doing it since 2007.
Yeah, exactly. That's how early they, like, inducted you into this bullshit.
The newspaper inducted me into that.
Yeah, exactly. That's what I'm saying. You're working for the man. You're like the dude who you give orders to GTA protagonists, and then at the end you get your comeuppance because that's what happens in a GTA game.
Yeah.
For me, I kick it old school. I kick it real. 5-star ratings is what I give. I would give this 4 out of 5 stars if I had to give it a rating.
I think
for me, well, you know, the fucking word of the day for this game to me is disappointing. And that's, but while I am, you know, I'm very much a story-oriented gamer as well. Obviously, because, like I introduced you to most of those, yes. those, like, the Mass Effect trilogy and the Persona games. And for me, like, but the best part about GTA, and one of the things about games is that it's not necessarily... You don't need to have the main story be necessarily just like...
picking up my keys over
and
over again.
I don't know, just did it.
Why am I doing that? This is like the fifth time this podcast I've picked up my keys and interrupted you, and I feel really bad.
I just threw them on the floor. Okay.
Okay.
But... fucking shit, now I completely... Oh yeah, okay. In a video game, the only way to tell a story is not necessarily through the linear, like, cutscenes and, like, story that they wrote that's like, this is the campaign. You know, like, it doesn't... You know, for a lot of games, like for like a Persona or Persona 4 or Mass Effect, for the games that are like, this is a story game, for lack of a better term, that like this is 100% the primary focus. This is really what the game is about, and the gameplay mechanics serve that. That's what those games need to be. But for a game like Grand Theft Auto, like my enjoyment from it is very much the same way I enjoyed Skyrim. And that in Skyrim, I never got past the third mission in the main story quest. I completed some of the guild, didn't really care about them that much. But just like with GTA, I found the world incredibly compelling to exist in, and there were a lot of, like, side stories to engage in. And for me, Skyrim, like, the number one, like, amazing story moment that was just, like, kind of completely out of nowhere, that is something they basically constructed, was I was just walking through the fucking mountains in the middle of nowhere and came upon a random lighthouse, went to the lighthouse, found everybody inside completely murdered, picked up some random notes, like, heard, like, saw there were notes about, like, hearing weird noises in the basement, went to the basement, opened, like moved this thing aside and saw there was this big cavern, and behind the cavern was, like, these, like, bug creatures and, like, a family of goblins, and I had, like, killed them all. It was just this amazing story that I stumbled upon, that I discovered by myself in the way created in my on my own. And that's one of the other ways you can have a story occur in a video game. And to me, Grand Theft Auto 5 allowed me to do that. And, like, I would just cite the first podcast we did on this of my story, of just my experience that's completely unique to me of trying to get to that military convoy and having Michael go on this just bizarre chain of events, like getting knocked out, losing my clothes, finding some random dude tied up to a pole that's late for his wedding that I have to help out. Like, all that shit. All this just crazy shit that happens that's completely unique to me. I think Grand Theft Auto 5 is an amazing vehicle to allow those things to happen. And when I think about the game, that's what I think about, because that's what I enjoyed. That's what I got from it. And while the main campaign is disappointing, that aspect of the game to me is immensely strong. It's about as strong as any of Rockstar's other games. Is about as strong to me as Red Dead Redemption. And in that way, I would recommend this game. That, obviously, like, hey, if you're listening at this point, I hope you fucking played the game anyways, because this would be a weird thing.
I recommend it, too, overall. I think it's, you know, I don't regret spending $60 on it.
Yeah. But it is a thing I recommend you play, and if you get bored of the story, stop playing it. It's kind of like, you know, obviously you had to finish it because...
Yeah.
You have an obligation to, like I would for if I didn't enjoy it, I would still feel compelled to have to finish it. What I would probably do that anyways, just because I'm weird about that stuff. But then also I'd want to talk about it on this podcast. But it's like, man, if you're playing the game and you're losing steam, just leave it. It's like,
here's the comparison I kind of came up with that was kind of odd, but I think it describes my thoughts on the game really well, actually, is the original Mass Effect. Really good game. You play it once, the 12-hour campaign. It's a lot of fun. But if you're an idiot who tries to get all the achievements in Mass Effect 1, you will overplay the shit out of the game, and you will hate it.
It's just, yeah.
And that's what I felt the story of GTA 5 did to me, is I hated GTA 5 by the end, because the story itself made me feel like I was overplaying it, and especially overplaying the parts I didn't like to such an extreme degree, it made me completely misanthropic about the game.
Yeah. So, yeah, like... So I'd recommend, don't do that. Like, it's kind of like, weirdly enough, going back to Skyrim, not games I would normally compare, but it's like the exact same thing happened with Skyrim, where when Skyrim came out, everybody fucking was ecstatic over that game, like myself, and I fucking love Skyrim. It's a great, great fucking video game. It's an amazing video game, but weeks after Skyrim came out, there was a heavy backlash against it, and one I was surprised about, because I enjoyed Skyrim immensely, but at that point, I just stopped playing it. I didn't finish Skyrim, because you can't finish Skyrim, but then reading people talking about this backlash and why, like, and this, like, I hate this game, and then them talking about, like, oh, I played this game for 90 hours, and it's horrible. It's like, what are you talking about? Like, you're done with the game. You're, like, you have no conception of a Skyrim is a game you stop playing when you get bored of it. And I think Grand Theft Auto 5 is that way. In a way that Grand Theft Auto 4 and Red Dead are not. Grand Theft Auto 4 and Red Dead are games that I feel like are done when you finish the story. But Grand Theft Auto 5, now knowing that the story doesn't wrap up in a satisfactory way, Grand Theft Auto 5 is a game you're done with when you're done with it. When you're just like...
It's a platform.
Yeah, I've had fun with this. I've had my experience with it. I've had crazy adventures along the way. But I didn't care much for the main story, so fuck it. If you only got like 5 missions into GTA 5, play the game for 20 hours and love the fuck out of it, good on you. That's the exact same way I played Skyrim, and weirdly enough, I think that's the same way you could play GTA 5 and really enjoy it.
Mostly, once you would have to play a little further to get all the characters, but yeah. But no, and I see that, and I think I could totally get behind that interpretation of it. Because, you know, and I do have, and also my favorite moment in the whole game, I told this one too, where I, you know, got in this plane and barely escaped the cops, that had nothing to do with the story.
Yeah.
That was just a weird accident I got into. But yeah, so those kind of magical moments like that, that just come from the gameplay chemistry, you know, work well.
Yeah.
Speaking of working well, let's talk about something that did not work well.
All right. Yes. This will be our last discussion. Yes. This one is running long, but motherfuck it, GTA Online, the what they you know, 2 weeks after the game, because they said, you know, hey, we don't want to launch this right when the game comes up, because they have, like, minor social hooks in the game that already, like, the single-player portion that got fucked when the single-player game came out. So, like, their app didn't work, sharing, like, their photo thing did not work in the single-player game. They're not going to try to launch a multiplayer thing at the same time. So they waited 2 weeks for the
and also, theoretically, if you wait 2 weeks, you would know how many people might be logging on. And
could, yeah, well, you know.
Could adjust to that.
Yes, yeah, so, obviously, GTA Online came out, and when it was released, huge fucking mess. Like, did not function. No, anybody who expected it to function, shame on you, because you shouldn't. Like, I'm not, like, it's sad that we live in a world where it's like, I can't expect this not to happen, because it happens every single time. Like, it doesn't matter the fuck it is. Like, it always happens with something on the scale that has that kind of online component. It always fucking happens. So it's like, I tried to log into GTA Online once or twice on the day it came out, once or twice the second day, then I waited like 3 more days, and then I was able to get in. You know, because it's just like, just wait on it. It's not, like, I'm not going to, like, you know, throw Rockstar to the wolves, because it's like, I would have to throw everybody to the wolves at some point that have done online stuff, because it's like, it's always fucking happens.
Well, it's, you know, I was still playing the main campaign, and also yeah. I didn't really care about GTA Online, so I didn't play it until the weekend. At that point, they'd already have the second patch and all that.
Yeah.
And, but so I was just enjoying watching the news stories and just laughing my ass off at it. Like, this is incredible.
Yeah, like, so, although, like, there is a certain level of it that was pretty extreme with, like, not necessarily that you couldn't get in, but there were some bugs that, like, luckily I didn't encounter this, although it wouldn't have mattered because I finished the game, but some bugs of, like, if you tried to access GTA Online, that would end up, like, corrupting your single-player stuff.
Yeah.
That's fucked up. Like, if that happened to you, you should go burn Rockstar's offices down or something, because that's super fucked up.
I just thought it was funny, just the sheer number of bugs, the sheer number of title updates they were doing, how much they were scrambling.
Yeah.
It really felt like everyone was kind of caught off guard, and it was kind of interesting. And then also, yeah, I mean, yeah, the people who were expecting that this wasn't going to happen were weird. And
I mean, Rockstar straight up said before it came online, yeah, that's like, guys, this isn't going to, we are literally the best-selling game ever. Like, there's no way this is going to, it's not going yeah, to work.
It can't.
Yeah, it's just, fuck you guys for thinking it's going to work, because there's no way in the world. But yes, so, do you want me to just go through my experiences with GTA Online, since I have a little more?
I have very simple thoughts, so I'll give them right now.
Okay, you go ahead.
Sure. I don't give a fuck.
Okay.
I played probably 2 45-minute sessions, and I was like, this is fucking awful. This is not fun. This is dumb. Once it finally opens up and I can go do stuff, all these cutscenes that I can't skip, fuck these are stupid. I finished the story mode. Why do I have to keep doing stupid story content? And then when I actually get into it, I can't do a fucking thing because people just kill me and stomp on my body and spew racist hate speech through my mics. And oh, how the fuck do I mute this? Oh, you can't mute all. You have to mute them all individually one by one. I am done. I am never accessing GTA Online again. This is awful.
No, I didn't have I've gotten killed by some asshole people in the open world a few times, but it was never a problem for me.
I couldn't
me.
Do anything.
And I've never heard anybody say a word in GTA Online whatsoever. So.
Oh, no, I couldn't. It was so maddening. Like, the first time, my first 45-minute session, when it finally opened up, I was doing some stuff. I wasn't getting killed a lot, but there were so many people talking, and it was like shrill 12-year-olds spewing hate speech and shit. And I couldn't find a way to turn it off, so I turned the game off. I was like, it was so fucking maddening, the din of voices. And then the second time it was the same thing, and I was like, oh god, I guess I'll just turn off again. And I finally was scrolling through a submenu and found it. But, I have seen other people who have that the same problem as me. The Polygon review of the online actually specifically mentions all my problems with it. So if you want to read the Polygon review, that kind of sums up some of my thoughts.
Yeah, for me, I'm just going to go with my GTA Online experience of, one, the single worst character creator
yes.
I have ever seen for anything ever. The very concept of it baffles me. The execution of it baffles me 1,000 times more. So for those who have not played...
It's like the anti-Mass Effect.
It's like for those who have not engaged with GTA Online whatsoever, when you make your own character, and when you go into the character creation, you know, most character creators are kind of like Mass Effect or Skyrim, where it's like they give you some like set parameters of like nose height and eye color, and like some of them like go into super specific stuff. Some of them are just like, hey, pick from like 7 different faces. And you just like pick all these different sliders. It's like, eh, I kind of like the way this guy looks, and then you move on. This right. is not that. First, you pick what your grandmother on your mother's side looks like. than what your grandparent on your mother's side looks like, than your grandmother on your father's side looks like, than your grandparent on your father's side looks at like, and then you, and that then determines what your mother and father look like, and you can like move sliders which affect how much your mother takes after either her grandfather or her grandmother, or how much your father takes after his grandfather or grandmother, and then there's another slider that affects how much you take after your mother or your father. Is the most ass backwards roundabout goddamn way to try to make a character you could possibly conceive. There's no even like simple way to just be like, I want my guy to be black, or I want my guy to be white, or I want my guy to be Asian. Like, you have to like scroll through all the lists and move all the sliders, and it's like, yeah, okay, like he looks vaguely Hispanic. I don't know.
I couldn't get it to not be half black, half white.
Yeah, like most of them felt else, like yeah. like he looked either like kind of vaguely Hispanic, like half Hispanic or half black or half white and half black or half white and half Hispanic. It's like I can't just get anybody to look like anything, and it's like. Like, either their face is really thin or it's really pudgy, and it's just, like, you can't manipulate, like, their height or anything. It's weird because Lamar makes fun of how short you are, and I was like, oh, did I do something weird? I want to go back and, like, see if I can manipulate stuff, make myself not look like a midget. Everyone just looks like a midget in GTA Online for some reason. But, like, yeah, it's so, like, I finally managed to get someone that is, like, he doesn't look like a horrible monster. I guess I'll go with this guy. And by horrible monster, I don't necessarily mean... like, he looks like someone who probably would murder you. But he doesn't look like something that came out of, like, a vat, you know? Like, it's such... it is just... it is so bad. It is the worst fucking character creator ever. And then on top of that, you then assign your stats. Which, like, the stats in GTA, just in general, are really weird. We're the only one that feels like I can measure... it in any way when actually playing is stamina, other than also shooting, because shooting affects your maximum ammo. But in terms of like, oh, my driving stat went up, doesn't feel like that changes how well you drive at all. Your shooting stat doesn't feel like it affects how accurate you are in any way.
It's actually one of those things where when I talk about this, doesn't quite feel like a game from 2013. Yeah. It's like that really feels like an old 28
yeah, kind of it's, gameplay. It's a weird aspect of the game. But then like assigning your points, it is like, it's so bizarre where you go like, oh, I spend 5 hours usually in a day sleeping. And so I spend 4 hours usually in a day partying and 3 hours doing illegal shit and like 2 hours sitting on my couch. And like all these different random activities you attribute time values to that you would do on a normal day for your character affect your stats. So it's like sitting on a couch may make you better at like driving for some reason, but then like make you worse at strength or something. And like all of them are just completely arbitrary. It's like, what the fuck is... like, just let me, like, give me, like, 5 points to just, like, drop into something, you know? Like, don't give me this, like, emergent, like, contextualized... like, it feels like a terrible late 90s PC game of, like, obfuscating all this, like, actually important stuff behind this, like, bullshit veneer of, like, reality or verisimilitude. It's like, don't just... let me drop 5 points into shooting. Don't make me spend 2 hours on you average a day sitting on the couch. That doesn't correlate to anything to me. So character creator, awful in GTA Online. Then once you actually get into the game, one, they made a terrible decision just in terms of like online stability in we're going to do a mission. You're going to be dropped into a race immediately.
Yeah.
Because what that did in terms of like trying to get into the online experience is everyone's trying to matchmake immediately. And that was like this like immediate bottleneck of like, if you could get past the race thing, then, which I just weirdly felt like if you could get past like the race thing in terms of like that person being black or something, I don't know, like what it said, if you can get past the race thing, it's fine, you know? But if you get past the race mission, you can actually... it was like, you could basically play the game. But for me, almost the entire time until I was actually able to get into it, I was just, like, stuck at loading session. It's like, well, okay, I'm never going to get into this session. And then, like, my character got lost, so then I had to wrangle with the, like, mythological character creator beast they had made to, like, make another vague facsimile of a human being that I could then play as. But then finally, once I got into the game, I find GTA Online interesting, but ultimately, one, like, I just wish I had, like, more, like, people who played a lot of GTA 5 to play with and just, like, more time. Like, I wish I was in high school again, able to, like, engage in a multiplayer game the way I did back then when I had all that free time and all those other people that I knew that all had so much free time that we could all just spend, like, every day playing Halo 3, you know? And it's like, I just don't have that ecosystem, so it's like, multiplayer games in general don't interest me as much anymore. But GTA Online, I think the like free roaming in the open world is fun. Like there's some problems with it. Like I feel like you just get like killed by random people too much, and that's aspect of it's annoying. And in online, your fragility is so much hampers the experience so much more to me than in the single player of just like basically once you get into GTA Online. My basic experience with it was I kind of liked the free roaming. I liked being able to get my own car and like kind of owning a car and like just kind of driving around the world and having my own character and like my own car that I was able to design and have like this sort of like ownership aspect and be able to sort of fuck around in GTA 5. That was kind of fun. But once you got into the actual missions, other than the co-op missions that were kind of okay, even if like I had to team up with random people, that's never ideal for co-op. Like deathmatch, terrible. The shooting, like basically GTA Online exposes all the like the flaws and like increases the flaws of the base game by several magnitudes. Where the shooting in GTA 5, like single player, I think is basically fine. When you're fighting against the AI, it works. Like it's a third person shooter. And playing against other people online, the lock on mechanic makes the shooting completely pointless. Or if you have the assisted aiming on, it's like the whole game just becomes, oh, I see you, I hold down the left trigger, and I hold down the right trigger, and you're just dead. It's just whoever sees whoever first, they just win. And you can play free aim, but the free aim in that game is nowhere near good enough to make that a satisfying control method either. So the deathmatch is, that's out. Like, it's so bad. It's more or less completely unplayable to me. Then on top of that, the racing, I mean, I just don't like multiplayer competitive racing in the first place, so that's not really for me. It's all just like, everybody slams into the first turn. Whoever comes out of that first turn on top, they basically win.
Yeah, I think there's something to be said for, there's a reason in the GTA 5 proper, Franklin is the only one who can do races, because that ability is kind of crucial to be doing an interesting race.
And on top of that, like, because, okay, then, but the overall, my biggest problem with GTA Online and sort of like the framework and the infrastructure is that it's player-driven to a fault in that everybody, the only way you can get into a match is if a match is being hosted, and it's kind of like a weird like quick match server browser. Like it's like if you played a PC multiplayer game and all you could do was quick match basically, and but like to quick match you also went into this like big overworld and had to go through like this really obscure menu by going through your phone and stuff and just being like, just drop me into you have like just drop me into something. Just drop me into some race. Just drop me into some mission. Just drop me into some deathmatch. Or drop me into this specific deathmatch, but I have no control over whether or not I want this deathmatch to be a team deathmatch, whether or not I want, and like by like this specific deathmatch, I mean this map, basically, for deathmatch. So you can pick a specific map. You can't pick, like, oh, I want this to be team deathmatch, or I want, like, I want friendly fire to be off in this game, or, like, I want, like, these are the weapons on the map, or anything like that. You can't pick any of that stuff. And for races, it's like, I can pick, this is the course I want to race, but I can't pick whether I want it to, whether or not I want to be a GTA-style race, which is one of the multiplayer modes, that basically turns GTA into Mario Kart, which those are super fucking fun. I've only ever managed to play one of them. So that one was super fucking fun. But almost all of the races are just standard, like, checkpoint races, which is where you can't shoot or anything. That's super fucking dull. And then they almost always have the traffic turned on, with traffic in a competitive race is absolutely infuriating, because now the race just comes up to this, like, thing of luck of, like, well, if that car was turning when I was going through this intersection in the race, I'm fucked. And now, like, because of this AI thing, I just can't win the race anymore. So that's terrible. And then you also can't pick the class of car that you want to race in, which that's doubly worse, because if you want to get upgrade your car, which I picked like a muscle car, because you can't get like a sports car or a supercar right when you start, which those are like all the classes of cars. If you want to upgrade your car, like get its like armor and engine upgraded, you have to win a certain number of races in that class of car. But guess what, motherfucker? People only race supercars. So if I wanted to upgrade my muscle car, which I do because it fucking looks sick as shit, well, I can't, because I'm never going to win 50 muscle car races because I can't even get into a goddamn one. So they, by trying to kind of, it's almost the same philosophy with the character creator in trying to create this like dynamic, interesting way of like, this is like, you know, you're in this like overworld and the overworld is the lobby. You lose the functionality of a normal multiplayer lobby where it's like, you could have kind of just had both, you know? You could have just allowed me to search, even if you didn't want to necessarily have, like, you know, like sort of official Rockstar matches, if you wanted the whole like people host specific events, you should still let me browse the events like a fucking server browser on the PC, because that's how it's working. All these people are hosting these matches. Let me just like cycle through like my specific what I want to filter if I want to get into a very specific kind of game, because there are so many multiplayer modes. Like, I never was managed to get into, like, there's a multiplayer thing where it was like, I think it was like people on bikes basically trying to like get somewhere and people in jets trying to kill them before they get there. I was never able to play it because nobody was hosting it, and if I hosted it, nobody joined because it never popped up. I don't even know how to access it. I only saw it because it was like a recommended mission type after I did a co-op mission. I jumped into it, no one else jumped into it with me. I just sat there for 5 minutes waiting for someone to join it because I wanted to see what it was.
Yeah,
there's a tank mission too that I've never been able to play because nobody's hosting it, and I have no means to play that multiplayer mode because they've just have not given me the tools to access what I want to access in the multiplayer, and it's absolutely infuriating.
Yeah, what the impression I got immediately, and then the impression I get even more strongly listening to you talk about all this and what I've gotten from reading about online, is like, it's something we got excited for because we think, you know, Rockstar's a great game company, yeah, and they are, and none of us thought about, they've never done multiplayer before.
I mean, they so have, how, but they've never done it well before. Like, GTA 4 and Red Dead had multiplayer, but there's so no emphasis on it.
It just strikes me something like a bunch of people who really didn't get how multiplayer worked or hadn't really observed multiplayer all that much, getting together and trying to make it work in a vacuum. And it's like, I don't know if I want to tell you guys it's bad, because I like you guys, but this isn't your forte.
Yeah. But I will say that after a certain point with playing the game, like, despite all those complaints, and they are significant complaints, I did start having fun with it. I just did start having fun driving around the open world, like, robbing random stores and stuff. They add, like, random activities that you could do in, like, multiplayer that you can't do in single player. And then, like, doing the co-op missions, I found that kind of fun. There are sort of horde-style missions that you can do that also is kind of fun. And those give you a lot of money. But it's like, I think ultimately, another, like I would probably actually still kind of keep on playing it if it wasn't that it also had on top of it the grind. Like, the multiplayer grind that I'm done with it now. Like, you know, like, Call of Duty 4, that was fucking awesome back in the day. Like, that multiplayer was revolutionary, interesting, I played the shit out of it, and I loved it, but at this point, I am done with multiplayer that has these unlocks that you have to play 30-plus hours of the multiplayer to unlock everything in the game, especially if that stuff gives you an advantage. I'm sick of it, because it's like, I miss the days where I could play a game of Halo, or like a game of Warcraft or Starcraft online. It's like, everyone's on a level playing field, it's pure competition. That's what the multiplayer is. I'm playing the multiplayer because I enjoy it. I don't want to play the multiplayer because I want to unlock the AK-47. I'm sick of it because that takes up way too much time. And now that time is so much more important to me, I can't engage with GTA Online. Even though I've kind of found the bits of it that I do enjoy and would want to play more of, it's hampered by the fact that it's like, well, right now the only weapons I have are a pistol, a micro SMG, and the normal SMG, and I have like no money because I spent all my money upgrading those because the upgrades are ridiculously expensive. You don't get a lot of money from doing the missions, and so it's like, if I want, and you have to get like to rank 50 to unlock like the RPG. And I've played and one of the worst things was I played a deathmatch where once I fully realized the deathmatch was completely broken, it was when I jumped into a deathmatch and I was probably level 8 at that point. So I had micro SMG was my best weapon, and there were three people in the game. One was level 32, one was level 27, and one was level 23. And guess who the top three scoring people in that game were? Level 32, level 27, level 23, because they are able to bring in their weapons, which is also, I think that's one of the options you can change in deathmatch, but I've never seen one where that was turned off. So they had fucking assault rifles. Of course they won. Like, it was just, like, literally, if you just looked at the scoreboard, it was basically ranked by what rank you were in the game. And well, so that's completely broken to me.
Yeah, and to be fair, that's a lot more extreme than, like, a Call of Duty.
Yeah, yeah. Call of Duty doesn't have that much, that big of a problem on that side of it, but it does have the problem of, like, where there is an unbalance of just, like, they have more access to all the stuff. That unbalances it even more because if that dude's a level 32, not only does he have better stuff, but he's played, like, three times as much of the game as I have. So he's naturally going to probably be better than I am because he at least has more experience with it. So, like, it's like the deck is so stacked against you, and it's just, like, that multiplayer philosophy, I'm done with it. Like, I want games to come out again that don't have that aspect to it. I'm fucking sick of it.
Yeah.
And God damn it.
Yeah, and I don't know if I'm completely sick of that, but it's like, I definitely feel like I'm at the same point in my life as you, where it's like, multiplayer used to be my favorite thing in games, mm-hmm. and now it's like, I really kind of just, because of my time is so limited, I kind of just want that single player story experience.
Yeah.
Although, I am kind of excited for, on the PS4, like, I'm going to be getting Killzone Shadowfall at launch. I'm excited that I'll have a good first-person shooter that hopefully has fun multiplayer. Yeah. Just because I always like that as a standby.
And I haven't looked too much into it, but I don't think Killzone Shadowfall has that aspect to it as much.
That would be so awesome if it was just a simple, like, just use the fun shooting mechanics of this fun shooter game with fun, you know, graphics and whatnot.
Yeah, but, like, I'm just, like, I don't want to have to contribute like 20 hours of my life to a multiplayer experience in order to get what I want from that multiplayer
experience. Yeah, I would rather spend the 20 hours playing a story.
Yeah, so that's the GTA Online. Like, I don't think it's irredeemable. I think if, like, them talking about, like, them wanting to add, like, heists and, like, improve it and make it sort of a living experience, I think they can fix a lot of it. One, change the fucking character creator. Just do it. Like, I don't care that that's, like, a really basic thing.
Make a KOTOR thing where you just have, like, 10 characters to
choose like, from. That would be better. That would be 1,000 times better than what they've given us. But, like, it's not irredeemable. It's just, like, it's not for us, basically, I think, is where it ultimately comes down to. I think it could... There are some things they could change in it that would make me come back to it and be more interested in it than I currently am. But I... think some of it is interesting. A lot of its ideas are interesting. It needs to be polished. And I hope they put the effort into polish it over its lifetime, because that's something they can do. It is a living multiplayer experience. They can update it continuously.
They certainly have the money.
Yeah. So I think, you know, I hope they do. Because if they ever manage to make a GTA game that, like, the online component is really compelling and what you, like, envision it to be, that would be awesome. But they need the experience and to work to get there. So
yeah.
I think this is an important first step. And it's certainly, you know, it's not great, but it's also not something anyone has ever tried to do, at least not in this way. It's something completely unique. So you can't really do this anywhere else. So that's GTA Online.
Okay. All right. Well, this is a long podcast.
I'm tired.
I'm tired, too.
We made a mistake recording this late.
I know, but it may be the only option for a while.
Yeah.
We'll see. Although, we could just record shorter podcasts.
That's true. Well,
this was a packed one.
So.
Next week, we'll find something to talk about. What one thing I want to say is that I think I had an idea for something fun to do on the podcast this month. We may do it, you know, over the next couple weeks. We may do it later, like, near Halloween. But I realized this is our third October doing a podcast, Sean and I. And we've never done a proper, like, talk about some good Halloween horror stuff.
Yeah.
And Sean is someone who, you're not the biggest horror expert in the world, but you like horror movies.
Yeah, so I've engaged with it in, like, certain eras, like Universal Pictures horror. I've watched a lot of that, so...
It's not where my area of film study is, but I've always wanted to watch some of this stuff. So, Sean, I want you to give us 2 or 3 movies we should watch this month for a later podcast. We can talk about them.
Okay.
Horror Movie Club.
Yes. So, yeah, I think...
What's number one everyone should see for Halloween?
Dracula. To me,
Bela Lugosi?
Yeah, Dracula and Frankenstein. Like, I do... Right now, I have not finished mentally compiling the list. We're definitely going to do Dracula, but to all the people out there, you should also watch Frankenstein and the Wolfman and, you know, the Invisible Man and basically all those Universal, the Mummy, all those. You should just watch all of them and all the sequels to those.
I want to say Universal did put out, or whoever owns those movies now, there's a big Blu-ray set, and I guess it's awesome.
Yeah.
And it's got all those movies in, like, pristine quality.
Mm-hmm. And then also, just tentatively, I'm thinking we'll probably watch John Carpenter's The Thing, just because I really want to watch that movie again, because that is a great, great fucking movie. And then I think I'm going to pick something really modern for the last one.
But Saw 4.
No, we're not going to do Saw. Like, that's... you know what? Oh, fuck. What's that movie? The fucking James Wan movie that just had the sequel. What the fuck is it?
Insidious?
Insidious!
I don't want to watch that!
We're going to watch Insidious? That's it. Okay, it's set in stone now. Dracula, John Carpenter's The Thing, and Insidious.
Why Insidious?
Because it's funny. It's not a bad movie. It's a good movie. The ending, I mean, a lot of people actually really liked the whole movie. I think the ending's ridiculous. I will fucking watch that movie again because, like, now I have a whole other perspective on it. But I want to talk about that movie because I think it just had a sequel, so it's relevant. Like, I don't really
want to watch it. Well, James Wan actually just had a movie come out that was hugely acclaimed called The Conjuring that we should see sometime too. Well,
yeah, but I want to watch Insidious.
Because
I know what's in that movie. I want to talk. And I want to pick movies that I've already seen so, like, we have different perspectives on it. But Yeah.
So if we can watch that like together and heckle it, I'll watch the shit out of Insidious.
Sure. Okay. But yeah. So she's that's a broad, you know, that's the 30s, the 80s, the now. That's basically all of horror movie history in a nutshell, basically, is Dracula, John Carpenter is a thing, and I've already seen Insidious. It's such a generic fucking name, I keep on forgetting it. But yeah.
If Insidious 2 is out in time,
it just came out in theaters.
I guess that's true.
I don't think it'll be...
That doesn't mean anything anymore.
Yeah, that's true. But isn't it Insidious Chapter 2, I'm pretty sure. It's yes. Just hilarious. I do want to see that movie at some point. I just don't watch horror movies in theaters. Yeah. But the way that movie, the Insidious 1 ends... Like how... Horror movies shouldn't have sequels. This podcast is going on too long. I'm going to end this on... This is a precursor for us talking about Halloween stuff come like the later podcast. Rule number one for horror movies... Don't make horror movie sequels, just in general, because every single horror movie has the same ending, and every single horror movie has an ending that does not lend itself to a sequel. Every single horror movie has an ending wherein you think everything is fine, because like everything has been stressful up to this point, but now everything's fine, we fixed everything, and then, oh no, oh shit, no it isn't, smash the credits. That's the ending to every fucking horror movie ever. That ending does not have a sequel. Because it's like, well, then what do you do? Oh, everything's shit again, like how the last movie ended. Now it's fine. And now it's horrible again. You just get into this, like, vicious cycle with diminishing returns over and over and over again. So I'm going to be creating horror movie lessons over the course of these podcasts. That's lesson number one. Don't make horror movie sequels unless you've got a really good idea for it.
All right, so here's what I'm going to say.
Okay.
Everybody see Dracula for next week.
Yes.
That's probably one of the easiest ones to find.
Yeah, you can fucking watch that everywhere.
Yeah. Whenever we do another podcast, might be next Friday, probably over the weekend sometime. We're not going to have another one on a Monday or Tuesday for a while, I'll just tell you that. But yeah, we'll do a Dracula next week, maybe the week after that we'll do the thing, and we'll end with Insidious.
Because that's the one we want to end on.
Yes.
I like how we're going in, like, inverse quality for me.
Well, but we're going, like, chronologically.
Yeah, we're going... But it's like, we're going best movie, second best movie, worst movie.
I'll get into this exercise more if I can start with the best one. I'll just say that. All right.
I think you'll enjoy and see
this. Should we double feature this and do Spanish language Dracula? Also, it's on the DVD.
Maybe. I don't think so. Like, that's too much to tackle.
I might watch it.
Yeah, I mean, I'll probably watch it actually on this Halloween. But
yes,
we should talk about Dracula and just straight up Bela Lugosi ass Dracula.
Okay, all right. See you then.
Yeah, that's it. Podcast over.